Greetings, Earth explorers. Welcome to X Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. In here, the results are always positive. We explore the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. Whether you are driving across the country or listening on the web while you're working on your favorite project, you are about to learn more about who we are, why we are here, and what we may become if you thought possible. We might go a little past your imagination, but have no fear. You will be safely traveling with us. Keep your arms inside the vehicle, recline your chair, and look out the window as we launch X Squared Radio. The foundations of religion and science were utilized to write our first two volumes of the Ark of Millions of Years. The third volume, called Unlocking the Secret, is about to hit the presses. We want you to be aware of what is coming. You and I know that your potential is absolutely unlimited. We have crafted the final work of the trilogy, so you have the tools necessary to work the law of attraction. Find out what the ancient masters knew. Learn the methods necessary to affect the universe on purpose for the good of your life. Go to the online store at X Squared Radio and get your copy on order today. If you have survived the disaster without food and clean water, then you need to visit NitroPack. They have been providing emergency preparedness supplies for more than 19 years. They have everything from 72-hour kits to a full year's supply for an entire family. We wanted you to have access to the best. That is why we searched for many months to find NitroPack. Click the NitroPack banner at X Squared Radio and get prepared. Greetings, Earth explorers. Welcome to X Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. The solar wind tonight is a moderate 426.5 kilometers per second. And finally, we have a sunspot. However, a little 974 poses no threat for activity on Earth. There is a small coronal hole facing Earth and may result in a wind capable of forming an aurora borealis. So you might want to go out maybe after midnight in the northern parts of the world and see if you can see it. The Earth is hurtling toward a warmer climate at a quickening pace, a Nobel Prize-winning UN scientific panel said in a landmark report released Saturday, warning of inevitable human suffering and the threat of extinction for some species. After 5 days of sometimes tense negotiations, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change adopted its fourth and final report this year, along with a summary on the science of climate change and the effects of human-produced greenhouse gases. It lays out blueprints for avoiding the worst catastrophes and various possible outcomes, depending on how quickly and decisively action is taken. The document says recent research has heightened concern that the poor and the elderly will suffer most from climate change, that hunger and disease will be more common, that droughts, floods, and heat waves will affect the world's poorest regions, and that more animal and plant species will vanish. Welcoming the report, UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon said climate change imperils the most precious treasures of our planet. The potential impact of global warming is so severe and so sweeping that only urgent global action will do, Ban told the IPCC after it issued the report. Synthesizing reams of data from its three previous reports, the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change for the first time specifically points out important risks if governments fail to respond. Melting ice sheets that could lead to a rapid rise in sea level and the extinction of large numbers of species brought about by even moderate amounts of warming on the order of 1 to 3 degrees. Also, some of our viewers or some of our listeners have pointed out that there seems to be a relationship between coronal holes on the sun and earthquakes. So if you live in areas prone to that kind of geotechnical activity, you might want to pay extra close attention to the solar weather on X Squared Radio. As you know, we have moved to a new time frame. Our new time is 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. Pacific. That's 8 to 11 Eastern time. The reason we have done that is through the great wisdom of our network, the BBS Radio Network, we have decided to align ourselves with the broadcast world so that we can dominate both forms of media. Right now, BBS Radio is definitely, by far, the fastest growing network on the Internet, and soon we will be breaking into the broadcast world because of the nature of our content. My guest last week apparently was the victim of telephone blocking by an unknown source. We attempted to connect with him, Al Bielek, multiple times in the last hour after he was cut off. We had no success. My guest next week is Dr. John Harper. Tonight we have two guests. The second is Bob Hieronymus. He is the author of Founding Fathers Secret Societies, subtitled Freemasons, Illuminati, Rosicrucians, and the Decoding of the Great Seal. He'll be coming up in our third hour. In our first 2 hours, we have the man who has opened more eyes to the reality of UFOs than I believe anyone else alive today. His ranch in Trout Lake, Washington is without a doubt the hottest spot in the U.S. for seeing UFOs. I have seen them there myself and photographed two there in broad daylight. Please welcome with me James Gilliland. How are you, my friend?
Doing great. How are you doing?
Doing wonderful. I am up here in the eastern part of the state of Washington where my AccuWindow forecast says it's about 29 degrees and drizzling. So I don't know what it is down there in the balmy southern part of the state of Washington.
It's snowing,
evening.
Actually.
Is it snowing down there?
Yeah, we're getting quite a dump right now. It's coming down pretty heavy.
Well, that's sweet. I love snow falling. I may just sign off the air and go for a walk if it starts snowing.
I just
really,
did.
Really.
I put on my waterproof boots and took a nice about an hour and a half walk in it and did some focus work, and it was great. I love that first snow.
Oh, I do too. It's so peaceful. Well, it's always a pleasure to have you on X Squared Radio. I know you are working hard to get your facilities ready for a long summer of explorers who come to your ranch to see their first real UFOs. So how have you been? How is that going up there?
It's going really well. It's been nonstop, even into the winter. We thought things would slow down, but people are still coming up, and we're still having, you know, a lot of UFO activity. It's getting, what's interesting is it's getting a little more sporadic, but there's more awesome displays, you might say. So we're getting some, like they're coming in three at a time, and we had a triple power-up where all three of them came in and powered up all at the same time. So that was pretty amazing. Unfortunately, I wasn't out there, so nobody filmed it. you know, the other guys out there didn't get it on film, but we've got a lot of new footage, and it's just constant. You know, we're getting flyovers, and things are busting loose right now everywhere, you know, the whole planet right now with the Larry King and the, you know, Washington press conference and all of that. It's, this whole issue is just busting wide open.
Well, it is, and I'm wondering, you know, if one affects the other. In other words, is the increased UFO activity responsible for the increased attention of the people on the subject of UFOs, or is it the increased consciousness on the subject of UFOs that is bringing about the heightened UFO activity? Sort of a cart and horse or chicken and egg thing.
Yeah.
Which do you think is having the greatest effect?
Well, I believe it's Earth's destiny to reunite, you know, with the greater family of man. People call them UFOs. I'd rather call them, you know, off-world visitors or our ancient ancestors. And,
yeah, I like that term better myself.
Yeah, yeah. What's going on right now is I know they're doing their disclosure, and they're showing up in just massive fleets over Mexico and Peru, and I was looking at the Filer's Files National UFO Reporting Center, and just, you know, he said it's a worldwide thing happening right now, but the United States is just having an incredible UFO flap right now. They seem to be showing up everywhere, and I was told quite a while ago that the real disclosure was going to come from the skies, and it's going to kind of force the disclosure on the ground, because they can't cover this up anymore. It's happening everywhere, and you know, it's becoming very, very clear that our mainstream press is totally suppressed and altered and controlled. So
yeah,
that's
kind of interesting. Since you're only going to be on for a couple of hours tonight, I want to go ahead and open the phone lines up early. Let me go ahead and announce those. You can call toll-free anywhere, U.S. and Canada, at 888-228-4494. And now we have a global toll-free number. So even if you're in Bangladesh, you can call us toll-free, 877-489-6350. And then if you have a cell phone or unlimited long distance on the weekends, you can reach us with 530-776-5154. Or 5185. And you can also reach me through AOL Instant Messenger. My username is Vision Officer. Just do a search for that, you'll find me. We already have a group of IMers popping in and giving us questions, and I'm going to give you one of the first questions here in a second, James. You know, I don't think there are many people who doubt that UFOs exist or that off-worlders exist, but there still are not many people who have actually seen one for themselves. This experience moves people from the ranks of believer to knower. So how do you think it changes people's lives when they leave your facility knowing they have seen a craft from another world or another dimension?
I think it totally blows their neural net wide open, because now it expands your consciousness. Just being out on the land and staring up into the sky with those billions of stars out there helps, you know, just being in that high frequency. But when you're there in that energy, you might say, and then these other things happen, people just blow wide open, and it's very life-changing for them, and they start exploring all kinds of other things that they might have thought weren't true or were, you know, just somebody else's imagination. But when it becomes real, I guess a good example is I often use this friend of mine from Korea, and he was a Qigong and Kung Fu master, and very, very, you know, centered, very grounded, very fearless, and when the ships came in and powered up and came over him, he just froze and stood there, and it took him a while to snap out of it, and so it definitely has a major impact on you, and it just makes you rethink, you know, this whole reality that we're in.
Well, one of my most prolific IMers, he goes by the name Lupon is Burning, asks a couple of questions that I myself had, and I still have from time to time, and that is, who does the flyovers? Who is piloting the crafts that come over the ranch and ostensibly communicate with the people on the ground?
Well, it's a really good question, because it's very important to realize that the ones we're working with are extremely advanced. They're very spiritually and technologically advanced beings, and there's an energy exchange that happens with these when they come over. And just because you're seeing a UFO doesn't mean that, you know, this is some kind of off-worlder or extremely advanced race of beings. I've seen other back-engineered things fly over and in the area, and there's no consciousness there. You don't feel, you don't get the energy hit, or you don't feel the tingles in the third eye and the crown energy, or you don't feel anything with these.
So you
ships,
definitely feel that they are benevolent, that they are there to help, they're there to inspire, they're there to spread a positive feeling.
Definitely. The ones that we're working with are from the Pleiades system, and from there's an Orion Council of Light, and then there's an Arcturian ships that come in. Those are the three main ones, and Andromedan ships as well.
Now, what is the difference between those three ships? What are the key differences?
Well, I've seen some massive motherships that are miles wide, and those are the Andromedan ones that come in. And it's not just the Andromedans on them. It's like a multi-race ship, like a federation or a consortium of beings on them. I've seen some other ships, too, that are different. These massive triangle ships, the ones that I saw were, you know, coming from the Andromedas. And they have ones that are about just the little hand ships that come along with them are, you know, call them the handmaidens, are, I think, 150 yards. So you can imagine how big the mothership, it's miles.
Well, but, I know I was up there last summer, and after the conference and after we did some visiting down in Oregon and then came back up, we were outside taking pictures of the mountain, Mount Adams, during the day.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, pretty much everyone was gone. There were about a half a dozen folks there just kind of hanging out. But there were two of us shooting pictures with digital cameras at the same time. And both of us, with both cameras, photographed the same craft. And this craft, by, you know, our range finding to the mountain, was somewhere around 500 feet long.
Uh-huh.
Is this what you would consider an Andromedan craft, being that size?
Oh, it could be. I'm not sure which group that is. I'd have to look at it. But I think those really long cylinder ones are Palladian, the massive cylinder ships that we see hanging out up there are the Palladian motherships. And then there's all kinds of ships stacked inside them like a lifesaver, you know. You know, they're inside those big motherships.
So that ship kind of makes its way through the dimensions as a main carrier ship, and then once they're in this dimension, they release the smaller ships.
Exactly. I mean, some of these smaller ships don't have the capability to travel that far of a distance, and the time involved and everything, and they don't have the ability to jump dimensions or do time jumps. So they rely on the bigger motherships to do that, and then they drop off the smaller vehicles. And then they have these little small ships that are just remote controlled that come out too that monitor things, and so there's a whole myriad of ships.
Kind of like we have too. We have remote controlled ships, drones, and
yes,
and predators and unmanned craft that we send around that are sort of operated by joystick from another location.
Uh-huh.
What about the Arcturian ships? What makes them unique?
Now, the Arcturians are, from my experience, they're just extremely advanced beings. And we saw one. Now, the mountain is, as you know, is about 13 miles away. And when you see something the size of a quarter, you know, that far away, coming over the top of the mountain and moving on down over sheer glaciers and you know, very steep lava cliffs and things like that. You know, now you're talking about some major technology, and I don't know, one of these days I'll try to figure out the math. You're probably a lot better at that than I am. But, I mean, that would have to be a pretty massive ship. And we had one of those come over and move down the mountain. And then it started bilocating into three, as many as four ships at once. And I got this on film. So, you know, to have a ship that massive, that big, coming over the top of the mountain and then, you know, just cruising right along it and then bilocating or turning into multiple ships, I mean, technology like that is just outrageous when you think about it. The energy it would take to do something like that is, by our calculations, is probably unimaginable. But by their calculations, it's probably a very simple feat. But, you know, that group seems to be very, very extremely advanced. They're almost like ascended masters on a ship, you might say, that are coming to check things out.
Well, there's a lot of curiosity about the ships and about, well, several banks of questions. Some of the IMers are sending me, right as we speak, Lupin is burning, is just hammering me with questions here. one question that repeatedly comes up is, do all the various races have the same agenda for coming here? Are they just exploring, or are they actively participating in the development of Earth humans?
Yeah, the best way to address that question is to look at the timelines and things like that, because in the past, we're a very aggressive, warlike country, and we're, you know, going through the world wars and all the other problems we're having. And so, and we're allowing the military to be the ones that would meet, you know, meet and greet these off-worlders. So the consciousness in which you seek is the consciousness in which you're going to connect. So in the beginning, there was a lot of low-level contacts, and we had the option of contacting different groups, and we could have worked with the more benevolent ones. But they had a kicker in there. They said, we're not going to give you the technology to assist you and clean up your planet, because that same technology could be used as a very devastating weapon, and you're not ready yet, so you have to lay down your arms and choose peace and unify as a planet, and then we'll help you restore the planet and, you know, move back to its original intent, which was to be an Eden, you know, where everybody lives in harmony with each other and nature and evolves to their highest potential. That was the original intent. And at the time, our leadership chose to work with some low-level contacts who traded the technology for, which was used as weapons and a lot of other problems that came with that. And they did a trade for genetics. So they did a lot of experimentation on people. That race, some people call them the Greys. It's like they're a dying race. They bred emotions out of their race, and this whole universe is shifting into the next phase or next frequency, and you can't make it without emotions. So
I think we have a caller on the line, James. Caller, right. Your first name and where you're calling from.
This is Mark from Ashport, Ohio.
Hi, Mark. Hi, welcome to the program.
Hi, Brooks. Thanks. James, I wondered if you'd ever heard of Charles Hall.
Yes, I have.
He has a really interesting book, and he describes a race called the Small Whites, which he believes are from a planet that is close to Arcturus. I thought you were mentioning the Arcturians or something like that.
Yes. This group that I've seen, the Arcturians that I've seen, were more human. They almost look like god beings, just beautiful beings. And,
yeah, I think Charles mentioned in his book that they don't require a whole lot of makeup and clothing to actually pass for one of us.
Uh-huh. Yeah, their eyes are a little different. I think they have to wear sunglasses.
Now, yep, James, have you seen these individuals? I mean, talk with them?
No, I haven't.
Oh, okay.
What I've seen is that most of my contacts, the grand majority of them are Pleiadian. And there's an Orion Council of Light and then the Andromedans, and that's the main groups that I work with. And a lot of times when you're working with certain groups, the other ones don't interfere. I mean, they'll buzz by and they're all working together, but they'll kind of honor another group's work and not interfere with that work.
Now, James, are they here to prepare the earth for their arrival or our departure? What's the feeling that you get?
Okay, my understanding is that there are some very low-level contacts, and they really, one of the Pleiadians, I asked them, I said, what about these low-level grays or the reptilians and the other ones? And she said that they have a vested interest here, but it's not to rule. And they've greatly overstepped their bounds, and their time is up. Their time is over, and they're kind of walking through their own death throes anyway. And they're being pretty much ushered out by the more benevolent ones, the extremely advanced spiritually and technologically ones. So anyway, they're kind of being ushered out, and now the other ones that are coming in, and some groups are here just to observe, and they're just watching the transition and the earth changes and watching and, you know, how we're going to get through it. And others are here doing all they can to assist us to get through those changes.
And, Mark, do you feel like that that they're making contact with people on Earth, not just world leaders and military people, but that they're making contact with people to try to raise their ability to affect the planet and affect the future of the human race?
Well, yeah, that's an interesting question. I believe that Charles Hall is in fact telling the truth when he says that there is a base there in Area 51/54 complex out there by Indian Springs. So I believe the Tall White's been here for hundreds of years. But overall, I think that there seems to be a raise in the level of awareness. And even was 6 months ago that I saw the disclosure film out on YouTube, and it really floored me. And I would say in the past 5 or 6 months, I probably read 7 books on the UFO phenomena. Yeah, there's definitely something going on. And it might even be related to this 2012 event, which I kind of wanted to ask you guys a little bit about.
It definitely is.
Is there a dark star? Do you believe there's a brown dwarf that's going to enter our solar system here shortly? Or is this just a pseudoscience? Or what do you guys think? Go ahead, Brooke.
Well, you know, when there are events deep in space that sometimes belch planets or asteroids or comets out into the cosmos, some of them are going rather slowly, say a few hundred thousand miles an hour, and it takes a long time to cover that kind of ground, and usually the light reflected off of those things or the radio waves reflected off of those things gets to us long before those objects get here. And government has bought most of the time in the major telescopes, be they radio telescopes or visual telescopes, and they're looking for things the government is interested in. And I think we had a news article on this program last week where the general public and even the scientific community was lambasting NASA for not spending the time necessary to protect the planet from objects, say, 2 kilometers and smaller, and not looking for what are called errant planets, or things that really aren't in orbit. They're just sort of traveling aimlessly through space. And we've done some estimates on that, and it's believed that there are on the order of 10 to the 7th errant planets. These are planets that are not orbiting around stars. And we also have very good evidence of stars colliding in space. We call them binary neutron stars. And they don't normally collide head-on. They sort of grab hands like 2 ice skaters and start swinging in toward each other, and they thus ripple space-time. But before those 2 stars met, they were not visible because there wasn't enough gravity between them to get them to light up enough where we could see them. So the probability of a dark star or something that does not put off light like a star passing into our solar system unnoticed is so high that it is hard to believe we're not looking for it. Fortunately, we have a planet the size of Jupiter in our solar system that sort of vacuums up those things before they get too close to us. But in the case that we are on the opposite side of the sun of Jupiter, it doesn't really offer us much protection. We are wide open to that kind of attack, especially if it comes off plane from our solar system. Our solar system generally lies in a flat plane. There are a few degrees of variation between the orbits, but not a whole lot. So if a planet or a star were to come into our solar system perpendicular or at some skewed angle to that plane, it would be very hard, if not impossible, for us to detect it before it got here, especially if it was traveling at half the speed of light.
Do you think that this second sun, the second star, is what's causing a lot of the climate changes that we're seeing?
It does seem likely that there is an energy source that's extrasolar, that is to say beyond our solar system, that is affecting the temperature of Earth, because it's also affecting the temperature of Venus and Mercury and Saturn and Uranus, and it's even affecting the temperature of Mercury. So here's the question. Is man alone responsible for the warming of the Earth? And the answer is irrefutably no. Because as far as I know, there are no SUVs on Mars. There are no SUVs on Saturn. And yet Saturn's atmospheric pressure in 19 years of monitoring it with the Cassini space probe has gone up by 30%. 30% the atmospheric pressure of Saturn. Now, that's not from the activity of the dwellers on the surface of Saturn. That is from an external energy source that is warming all of the planets in our solar system. Every planet in the solar system is beaming back out into space more energy than it gets from the sun.
Well, does that then lead us to the fact that maybe the corporate control media is not discussing this issue? I mean, it sounds pretty hands down from what you're saying. That,
you know, I don't think it's the media. I think it's the religion of science.
Oh.
I think the high priests of science have said, look, the world is flat, and we don't want to hear any other ideas.
Wow. So
you know, there's a Russian scientist that did some work on this, and what's his name, Dietrich? I can't remember his name. Demetrius, I think, and he said that our whole solar system, the heliosphere, is glowing about 1,000 times brighter because we're moving into a new place in the universe that's highly charged, and
sure.
Some people call it the photon belt, or there's all different kinds of names for it, so we're definitely moving to a new place in the universe, but my feeling about global warming is we are definitely in global warming. The cause of it is not so much the carbon, you know, carbon dioxide and things like that, but why not clean it up anyway? I mean, it's really screwing people up, you know, a lot of the toxins and things coming from the oil companies, and so, you know, I think we really need to clean that up and bring in these new energies anyway, just for the betterment of man, and it might slow down things because it's definitely aggravated. Global warming is aggravated by,
sure,
by man, but I don't think it's the emissions are the cause of it. It's a bigger cause, but it's being aggravated and accelerated.
Well, I don't think anyone doubts that it is ludicrous and infantile in this 21st century, with all of this technology laying at our feet, to be shoveling our planet into our gas tanks and burning it. There is a better way.
Yeah. Well, I think there's a couple people that still hold that position, you know, and they're in the highest offices on the planet.
Well, unfortunately for the world, those in elected office have little or no effect on the outcome or, shall I say, the breakthrough knowledge or technology to come forth. They don't have any effect on it whatsoever. It is simply the bureaucrats and the corporate moguls who want to let technology out one tiny baby step at a time. That's why you don't get the latest model of the Xbox. You get the Xbox they thought up 3 years ago so they can make a return on their investment for each model. They're not going to give you the latest technology. They're going to give you the next technology. And that's why we're just making 1 or 2 miles per gallon improvements on our vehicles.
So, is zero-point energy real?
Well, I've seen it. I've seen it operating, and I've held devices in my hand.
The simple definition of zero-point energy is incorrect. What really should be said is that they're tapping into energy that's outside our present dimension. Now, the energy is present. The energy is coming in from a point outside the set that makes up the experiment. In that respect, it looks like zero energy or zero point energy, but it really isn't. It's bringing in energy from areas outside the set that's of observation. The perpetual motion or free energy does not exist, but it, ask a more basic question. What is electricity? What is electricity? Can you tell me what electricity is?
No. No, I couldn't. Not at all.
Well, when you take something as simple as a pool of liquid hydrogen and you cool it to as close to absolute zero as you can get, you expect to see something like Niels Bohr described, some little electron going like a little planet around a little sun that's a proton. But that's not what you see. What you see is the electron blinking out of existence and then reappearing in another location around that proton. It could even be a different electron. We don't really know. What you do see is the probability that Niels Bohr and Heisenberg both predicted is accurate. It is mathematically sound, but the flow of electrons is not what we think it is. It is actually an interdimensional sharing of energy, which we have learned to use in rather primitive ways. So once you start understanding what electricity is and what it isn't, for instance, if I have a 50-mile electric cord and I plug my end into the socket, when do you receive current on the other end of that wire? Is it the speed of light?
Well, that's a good question.
No, you receive electricity instantaneously.
Wow.
That's right. Wow. So the kinetic energy of live electricity going from one side where you just plugged it into the light socket to the hairdryer that's 50 miles away is instantaneous. It does not behave like, you know, little pool balls being struck on a copper atom on one end of the wire and then bouncing from atom to atom along the line until it pops out the other side. It's instantaneous.
So when people like John Hutchinson say they've created batteries that operate off of zero-point energy, I mean, he is telling the truth then.
Well, he is. John Hutchinson is an amazing empirical scientist. I've seen his work. I've tried to interview him on this program. We have communicated by email for years. To see his work just absolutely blows your mind. But in reality, what he's doing is he's learned how to connect two dimensions so that we benefit from the work of that energy. That is very profound.
Well, guys, thanks. I'm going to listen online here. It's been a great conversation.
All right, Mark. Thanks for calling in.
I'll tell you the way it was explained to me. I don't know if this is accurate or not, but what I was told is if you look at two funnels or vortexes, you know, like two tornadoes on top of each other with a point in the middle,
mm-hmm.
and what they're saying is that on one side, there's this huge generative force. It's generating the energy. It's collapsing down, contracting to that point, whatever you want to call it. And then there's this tremendous explosion, and that creates the radioactive side where it explodes out and radiates out and expands. And most of science only teaches you one side of the equation, that the Big Bang, you know, everything just goes bang and everything expands and radiates outward. But we've forgotten the other side of the equation, because you have to have, wherever you have expansion, you have to have contraction. It's always, there's always two sides to the equation, and they seem to miss the second side. I don't know if that makes sense to anybody.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. There's a physicist in Hawaii whose last name is Haramine.
Yes.
And, you know, he's done some tremendous work. For one thing, he's a great presenter. He really does a great job live in front of people. And he has put out a six-hour DVD, actually two DVDs, if you, or four DVDs if you watch them in series. You really get a neat description of where physics is and what it doesn't understand, what modern physics doesn't understand. And that really falls squarely in his field, where he says one universe or one system of energy is collapsing, sort of like an exhaling lung, and the other one is expanding, sort of like the balloon that's expanding as a result of that collapsing lung. And it's very instrumental, it's very fundamental, and when you start looking at physics from those points of view, it begins to open your understanding to the reality that what we see with our eyes, what we hear with our ears, is not everything there is in the universe. There's much, much more.
And, you know, a lot of people say the reason we haven't been taught the other side of the equation is because that is where all the fuel is energy. You know, unlimited energy exists that we could be tapping into, and, you know, we wouldn't be having to burn any of these fossil fuels, and that technology is already here. It's been on the planet for quite a while, but it's definitely within the black projects.
I consider burning fossil fuels not too much unlike rubbing two sticks together to make fire.
Exactly.
We are capable of moving past that. For instance, we've had ion drives for space engines since 1968, and we're just now starting to put them into vehicles. One of my IMers, Lupin is Burning Nose of John Hutchinson, and says that he's possibly an Andromedan contact, and that's why he's able to, without all the advanced degrees and years in school, he just simply builds the levitation equipment that he puts together, and it works. Now, I've seen a video of his where he actually launches a cup of coffee. Now, I'm not talking the cup. I'm just talking the coffee jumps out of the cup because of the magnetic field that he generates. And the coffee's not laced with iron. These are inanimate, well, these are non-ferrous things like plastic jugs, lumps of ice, styrofoam, and he moves them around as easily as you would a lump of iron with a magnet.
Yeah, I've seen that. I had a couple of his little quarters that he threw into his device, and they just shrank down to nothing. It was they were smaller than a dime, I think, or something like that, but they were a quarter before he tossed them in there.
Wow.
I thought that was pretty interesting. It's a good one to wrap your head around, you know, when you see this.
Well, one of the questions that keeps coming up, James, is us, you know, humans. You know, were we once travelers of the stars and we just got lost or stranded here, or were we seeded here to develop like some new experimental race? Or do you think there are other humans on other worlds, or are we just the only ones, one of a kind?
Well, it's my understanding that the first beings that set foot here were almost 28 million years ago. And they're finding evidence of this. They're finding these first life forms, the trilobites, you know, and they're crushed with boot prints. So there was some kind of advanced man that wore a boot, you know, that actually stepped on these trilobites and things, you know, millions and millions of years ago. I think they have like a gold chain and a lump of coal, and I can't remember if it's something like 500 million or something years old, but they've got all of these just outrageous. I think it's Cremo's work there. Michael Cremo
for Forbidden Archaeology.
Exactly, and he's found all of this all of these finds that are breaking all the archaeology books and history books, and it's just tear them apart. You know, when you look at what they're finding right now, you know, they're finding diodes that are thousands of years old, you know, way before we were on horse and buggy. So anyway, we've been a planet that has gone through both natural cataclysms and wars and several other things over and over and over. I believe we're like the fifth civilization that's been on this planet that's risen up. I know I've heard the story of the Anunnaki, and I think that was about 450,000 years ago or something, supposedly, where they came down and, you know, manipulated some ape-like human beings or whatever that were already on the planet. They were already evolving naturally, and they added their DNA to this group. And it's important to realize, people go, oh, we're a victim. They didn't give us all the DNA. Well, they gave us a jump in evolution, but, yeah, DNA is not fixed. So we can always continue to evolve. DNA is definitely not fixed. So we continue to evolve. We got a jump in evolution. And then we had the major cataclysms again, the natural ones where we have the planet, you know, pole shift every so many thousand years and things of that nature. But the latest, the big colonies, the latest two were Palladian colonies, which were Atlantis and Lemuria, or Mu. And those were Palladian colonies that started up again, and they drew a lot of the other star nations to them. And so we're just, right now, we're just a big mix. We're one of the biggest genetic mixes that you can ever imagine, and not just human genetics, but plant genetics and animal genetics as well. And so a lot of these creatures were actually brought from other planets and seeded here. You know, so it's just something that there's been a lot of tinkering, you know, a lot of genetic tinkering. There's been a lot of things brought here, and it's such a diversity of genetics here on the planet. That's why it's so important to preserve this, because there's
maybe that's why we're so interesting to other races, is that maybe we are unique. I think we have another caller on the line. Caller, your first name and where you're calling from.
It's Haya from Victoria.
Well, hello.
Hi.
Hello.
I love
my two favorite people.
Thank you.
Well, Haya sent me about a dozen pictures of orbs that she took, and they are phenomenal. They're really, really well done. I especially like the blue one. Very, very ornate.
It's huge, isn't
gorgeous.
It? And I sent the same thing to James as well.
Oh, yes, I remember those.
Yes, and it's funny because, you know, I listened to your DVD quite a few times, and as you said, that you could try to put out to, as you said to me, Brooks, last time, put out and see what I receive.
Yeah.
So I did. I put out to actually Malia and Blagie, and I said, come on, guys, I need to have some sort of answer from you. And I just got this feeling to start clicking, and that's when I got those pictures.
You know, a lot of people don't realize that a lot of the ultra-dimensional contacts are actually coming in a light sphere or an orb. And one of the times, some very advanced Palladians told me to go out, and they said, we're going to come down into the field. And so I go out in the field with my camera. I'm sitting there waiting. Nothing's happening, but I'm feeling all this energy moving through me. And I'm going, I know they're here somewhere. And so I shot a picture, and I got these beautiful, like, ultraviolet, or look like bluish-purple orbs, five of them right in front of me. Brilliant, very almost solid-looking. And I went back inside, and I looked at the footage, and I go, oh, my God, look at this. You know, I got this big truth chill down my neck, and I go, that was you, wasn't it? And they said, yes. So they have the ability.
I've been getting bright orange ones, and I've been getting red ones. Very, very white ones, and I'm getting one that are rectangular that are almost like color in them. And then I've got one that I don't know if you got them. Yeah, I call them raining orbs, and it looks as though there's orbs everywhere. Some of them are translucent, some of them are very, very bright and opaque, and others are blue, and then I've got purple and gray, and they're all odd things. And then I've got ectoplasm, which I have absolutely no idea what. It's so solid. It's unreal.
Oh yeah, it's pretty normal for when you're engaging this energy to get that. We get a lot of diamond shaped orbs as well. And what I found out is somehow the diamond shaped orbs are somehow connected to the Arcturian energy. And people that have real strong Arcturian connections, when they come up, if you take a photograph of them when they're out in the field and using the energy of the land to connect in, all of a sudden they're surrounded with these diamond shaped orbs.
Well, I've been pulling in a lot of orange lately, orange and bright reds and some light yellows, and I've always had predominantly blue, whether it's very, very small or large ones. Some are very distinct, but recently I've noticed a change in them. Like, it's like they're almost like pods, and they're spewing things out of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're when you start seeing the real reddish pink ones or the orange ones, it means those are the guys with the shakers and the movers that get ready for some major movement. Because when they start coming in, it means things are going to start moving real fast.
I was wondering.
Yeah, what do you make of that, James? That you know, orbs traditionally have been white or kind of pastel, or occasionally you see a blue one. But I've heard more than one person around the world of it, people that I speak to and that I email with, everybody is seeing this shift to orange energy. What does that mean?
Well, a lot of the orange energy represents the divine intellect, you might say, and so the new wisdom, more of a divine wisdom, is pressing on the planet. More of a spiritual wisdom is coming in, and a lot of the great masters, you know, the yogic masters and the lamic masters, you know, have that frequency or that color to them. So it just seems that we're going through a renaissance of awakening, and there's just legions of masters behind that. And these guys are a little more down to earth, and they're movers and shakers, and they make things happen. You know, they're like the bulldozers in the spirit realm. So
are we awakening?
Definitely. We're definitely.
How about the big blue ones? What does that mean?
Well, I'd have to see it, because blue is the realm of love and wisdom, and
those are pulling tons of them in.
Yeah, that's some kind of a master energy. It's like a lot of times Jesus appears in that blue. Sometimes it's an ultraviolet blue, and sometimes it's just blue.
I have like light blue. I've got small blues. I have medium blues, and I've got some that are almost to the point of turquoise.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of people that are seeing the turquoise coming in now lately, and that's kind of a new one. I haven't seen that much of that, but. When I used to meditate, I used to work with a being by the name of Tassamara, and he's like an ascended master, a very ancient one, and spells his name really strange, like TXOS, like a real ancient spelling. But he used to come as a turquoise energy, and I'd see him, you know, in my mind's eye, I'd see this beautiful turquoise light whenever he was around. But it's just a kind of a frequency. Green is healing. And blue is that love and wisdom, so it's kind of the combination of the love and wisdom and the healing energies coming in.
Do you ever see blue and gold together?
Like, I have golden, orange.
Yeah, the golden ones are coming in from the plane of bliss. They're coming in from a real high spiritual level. When you see the golden ones.
How about the white ones?
The white ones are, a lot of times the white ones are just like some, kind of like guys hanging out. They're like beginners.
What about the blue ones and blue with gold? What does that mean?
Yeah, the blue with gold would be that combination of love and wisdom, you know, and that higher plane of bliss, you know, the God being energy or whatever you want to call it.
Ah, because I've been pulling in so many colored ones. I mean, I'm sending you a DVD. It'd probably be two of them, because I have over 1,000 pictures. And they start from extremely bright ones that are zinging by. I have ectoplasm that I've, like blue ectoplasm. I have blue streaks. I have white ectoplasm. I have some really weird stuff. And then if you take a look when you zoom it in, I have like rectangular spheres that look like they have small orbs inside them.
Huh. Yeah, that's pretty interesting.
You have to take a look, because I'm sending you some DVDs because I've got so many. There's no way I could send them on the internet.
Yeah, I'd like to.
But I've left
like
some pictures so that you can see that it's just outside of my window, literally.
Yeah, there's a new movie out. We have it on our website now. It's called Orbs, The Veil is Lifting. And I'm in the movie. I think Jay-Z Knight's in the movie. Michal Ledwith is in the movie. Some physicists are in the movie. And it covers all of this on the different orbs and gives a scientific background to a lot of it. And we just put that one out. Hope and Randy Mead put that one out. It just came, it's available right now. It just became available. So that's a good place to get a lot of the information from. It doesn't go into the detail that I just did, as far as what each frequency represents, but...
Now, James, you just released another movie not long ago that took off. What's the name of that movie?
Oh, The Contact Has Begun.
Yeah,
right.
I've got that coming.
yeah, that's taken off like crazy, and it was done with high-definition TV some of the best of the best special effects people are involved in it. The guys that actually wrote the programs for the editing software.
It's really, really, really well done. I just sat with my jaw on the floor.
Yeah, Brooks is in that one, so you'll be able to see Brooks in that. Yeah, we're
except for that.
I think in one of my pictures, it's very faint, but I thought I caught something during kind of like I've got orbs like during the daytime almost where you can see them, and then other times I've got some on the water which are almost translucent. I've got coming out of the grass. I mean, I've got some really weird stuff here. And as I said, when you get the DVDs, you'll have to let me know what you think of them. Some of them are really odd. Especially for the stuff I took up at your place, up at the ranch.
Oh, yeah.
And they were much paler and they were multicolored, where I seem to be pulling in specific colors and very strong colors lately.
Yeah, we have different things going on at the ranch. Sometimes when we have a real focus group, we get the really colorful, beautiful ones. When we get a whole lot of people, we don't get as many as the brilliant colored ones. But we still get them, though. But the whole field just fills up with the more. I think the lighter white ones are more like the angelic beings that haven't incarnated yet. They haven't come into the earth yet.
Hmm. Well, one thing's
for sure. I definitely feel an energy of them pulling me in all the time, constantly.
The Earth is definitely a place of great interest around not only this dimension but other dimensions. It's clear that energies are being attracted here by the enlightened state of the human being. I notice that the mood or the attitude or the level of love that's being projected by any one group can greatly affect the other dimensional energy that comes into the area. I've seen digital photography of groups that were expressing a lot of fear, and there's nothing, or ignorance, and there's nothing. But when they start projecting love, when they start reaching out with that immensely divine energy that's generated by the human being, they seem to come from everywhere. And I think, at least in my own personal opinion, that they are somehow energized by our positive energy. And that may be why they come here.
Yeah, I feel that there's an exchange. There's definitely an exchange of energy. And when we really realize how powerful we are, I mean, we have the ability to create all this. I was talking with Standing Elk, which is one of the Lakota chiefs, and you can see on the website where I have this huge orb actually coming out of my chest, and it's about three-quarters of the way out, and it's an extension of my own consciousness where you can travel and remote view and check things out by going out of your body as a light sphere on a higher level, and we've actually photographed that in process, as well as my whole body, one body coming out of another one as I'm leaving to go out of body. But you really think about it, when you die or you leave this plane, you end up as a light sphere. You blast up out of the body, through the spinal column, up out the crown, and you just keep going. So
This is why we don't let James drive much.
Yeah.
Well, I've had two near-death experiences myself when my daughter was born in 83, and they thought they lost me. And, of course, I didn't think so, because when I woke up, I told them that they should be cleaning the fan up top. And they were kind of, what?
Now, did you see yourself...
I'm not frightened of death. And
Did you see yourself as a body with arms and legs, or were you just visually watching from above?
I sensed myself, but I didn't see my legs or arms at the time. But it was almost, and then all of a sudden, I was almost in a place of a lot of contentment. But there was nothing there. It was just white everywhere. You know.
Yeah, you probably didn't go. Prayer weren't gone long enough or went far enough, but often that happens. Every near-death experience I've talked to is different, and a lot of it is according to your consciousness or how long you've been gone. And so some people, it's just a short little trip. You know, they just kind of go out of the body, check things out, and then pop right back in. And, you know, people totally release, and they have no attachment whatsoever. They just blast off and go through the tunnel and end up in the plane of bliss, you know, so... as long as you don't have any baggage that you're carrying with you. So it's really different for each person, I've seen. If you have a lot of religious programming, you know, you might end up in a thought form reality that may seem like hell to you, because that's your program, and you're going to magnetize people and events to you according to your consciousness. That's where you're going to go if you have a lot of fear and guilt and unworthiness. So there's all kinds of things that can happen after you cross over, but the majority of people don't go there. Most of them move just, there's a big kind of a cleansing and a wash of energy, like a burning, and you blast through and you go up into the higher levels.
Wow, I don't know what he did, but I know that whatever happened to me, I certainly changed completely.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I started working at hospice work, and I could sense when people were leaving their body, and I knew they were around, even though they had passed away, and, you know, I had no fear, you know, of it anymore. It was like, there was nothing to fear anymore. And then I had this odd thing that just popped into mind, that I don't die.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you never die. And people would say,
don't
get, you know, it's like people would ridicule that. You know, how can you say that? I just said, well, you know, I'm not going to die. I don't understand it, but I just know, you know.
You might change state. You might even change sexes, but you're not going to die.
Exactly.
We have about 6 minutes left in this hour, Haya. So if you want to call back, you can call back. I have a couple of people stacked up, and you want to get some more.
I'll send you more orbs if you like.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sure. Thanks.
That's
okay.
Good. Thank you so much for coming.
I'll talk to you later then.
Okay.
All right.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
You know, the times seem to be lining up with the cosmos, just like the Mayans and the Hopis said they would.
Uh-huh.
How do you think they knew that these times were coming? And why did they feel it so vital to their lifestyle to preserve a warning for us in their buildings, in their art, in their songs, in the scriptures that they had? You know, why didn't they just care about themselves? Why did they spend so much of their gross national product to make sure we knew what was going to happen in our day?
You know, I think what happened is that they were given a lot of this information from the Star Nation. Some of them were part of the Star Nation. And also, too, when you look at the original Anunnaki guys that came down here, they actually created a lot of these temples, these massive temples. And some of them stayed behind because they would, I think there's about 100, I think it's 100, I can't remember how many year cycle there is. It's not very long, but when they jump ship, you know, from their planet when it's spun around, they stayed here for quite a while, but then they had to jump back on the wraparound, you know, as it was going back out again.
Sure.
Some of them stayed. And they kept that technology and preserved it and taught it to certain individuals, and then they just kept preserving it from there on, you know, as a warning to the future. And it seems like almost all of them are tied into these major solar cycles, which is probably even bigger cycles than the solar cycles. But they definitely knew how these energy waves or patterns would affect the Earth. And you know, people don't realize what happens whenever you have a major coronal mass ejection or a flare hitting the planet. It affects the bioelectric fields around the human body, and people kind of either go nuts or go through a fast evolutionary jump. There's all kinds of things that happen when these energies hit, you know, the planet, and they've tied them into major historical changes now. So it's all tied together, and they're aware of that whole process and how it unfolded.
And you think these ancient civilizations went above and beyond the call. I mean, they had basically primitive technology. They worked with stone, and yet they felt compelled to leave this record so that we would know that some alignment is going to occur, and that energy is going to have a profound effect upon the DNA of the human being. There is a lot of sleeper DNA inside the human being.
Exactly.
And you're right, this evolution is snapping into place.
Yeah, it's activating. The energies are activating. Even consciousness shifts are activating the DNA, and they're creating DNA changes and kicking on a lot of this so-called junk DNA, which isn't really junk DNA. It has a function. It's just not active.
Yeah. Well, let's take our last 4 minutes in this hour. We have a caller on the line. Caller, where are you calling from and your first name?
It's Cindy from Washington.
All right.
Well, hello, Cindy from Washington.
Hello. I just wanted to say that I didn't really know who Mr. Gilliland was until I realized I sent you those pictures of orbs, and they're from his ranch. One of my very best friends was down there at your place not long ago. Her name is Jen Trodahl.
Oh, yes.
Yes, she's one of my very best friends.
Oh, great.
And she sent these to me by email, and I thought they were amazing.
Yeah, it's a pretty amazing place.
That's the place to go to see them for yourself, Cindy. By the way, Cindy's our neighbor up here in eastern Washington. So she's sharing this rather frigid weather in eastern Washington, just down the street from us.
Uh-huh.
And it's kind of strange the way this works, James. And it's happened ever since I first came to your place about a year and a half ago. Wherever I go, I seem to meet up with these people who have such synergy, and it's like we've known each other our whole lives.
Yeah, that's really strange. I was going to say that. I felt like I knew you for a long time.
Well,
it's interesting how the connection, too, how everything, the synchronicity in that, how
it's
constantly spinning around and coming back to us.
Yes, there's no doubt.
Tell me something,
can
you, James?
Yes.
I had one experience with an orb, and it was probably about 12 years ago, and it was a sort of a medium gray orb. What's with that color?
You know, I don't know too much about that. I'm really hoping it isn't one of the grays coming in, but before that,
I had never even heard of these things.
Yeah, I've seen when they're kind of gray, it's usually a discarnate spirit a lot of times. It's usually a family member or somebody that's attached to the house or hanging around. They're not really generating a lot of light.
Well, here's the strange thing. I was dealing with some abductees that night. We were talking about their experience. And it came through the front door as I was talking to them as they were leaving. And the first thing that hit my mind was, oh, my God, I don't want this thing to follow them home. I don't know why I attributed it to them, but 15 minutes after they left, I got a phone call, and it was the man. And he was frantic on the phone and asked me what I had sent home with him. And it was in the bathroom, down in the corner underneath the sink.
Hmm. Mm. It was an orb, or what was he saying?
It was this. He described, I said, what is it? He says, it's sort of this medium, fuzzy-looking gray ball. And I went, oh, my God, it's that thing that was here in the house.
Yeah,
wow.
it could be connected to the gray somehow. I'm not sure. I'd have to kind of go in and look at that on another level.
You know
level.
What a cush ball looks like? You know, a kid's cush ball?
Uh-huh.
Well, that's what it looked like, and it was probably the size of a baseball.
Wow.
And it just floated through the front door before I opened the door, and I was looking at it like, what is this? And then it went through the wall into one of my bedrooms.
Yeah, it almost sounds like some type of a probe that would be sent out, like an observer energy, to observe and check things out. And it could have been connected to one of the people there. Or the main thing to do is not to get into fear when you see things like that and invoke the higher beings to come in and assist you whenever you have a situation like that.
Well, I wasn't afraid.
They won't be able to
abide.
Yeah, they won't be able to abide if you bring in the higher being. We're going to have to take a break, about 6 minutes. So I appreciate the phone call, Cindy. And we're going to continue with one more hour with James Gilliland. So don't go away. This is X Squared Radio, and this is a three-hour program. So hang around. We'll be back after these messages. Foundations of Religion and Science were utilized to write our first two volumes of The Ark of Millions of Years. The third volume, called Unlocking the Secret, is about to hit the presses. We want you to be aware of what is coming. You and I know that your potential is absolutely unlimited. We have crafted the final work of the trilogy, so you have the tools necessary to work the law of attraction. Find out what the ancient masters knew. Learn the methods necessary to affect the universe on purpose for the good of your life. Go to the online store at X Squared Radio and get your copy on order today. If you have survived the disaster without food and clean water, then you need to visit NitroPack. They have been providing emergency preparedness supplies for more than 19 years. They have everything from 72-hour kits to a full year's supply for an entire family. We wanted you to have access to the best. That is why we searched for many months to find NitroPack. Click the NitroPack banner at X Squared Radio and get prepared. Have you ever thought about owning a telescope? I mean a really good telescope. Well, at the Discovery Store, you can find the world's best telescopes at great discounts and free shipping. They have come a long way, you know. Most of the comets discovered in the last 50 years were found by amateurs. There is no better way to view the sun than with a coronoscope. Trust me, you will be captivated if you ever get to watch the sun through one of these units. Who knows? You might just save the planet. So plan a trip to the Discovery Store at X Squared Radio. This is Brooks Agnew with X Squared Radio with a message for our friends in the radio broadcast world. If you have noticed that your listeners aren't around anymore, it's because they are right here with us. If you would like them back in your radio fold, then all you have to do is add X Squared Radio to your program content. The statistics don't lie. We are now the fastest growing talk radio program in North America. Don't be late, because we are about to launch another hour of X Squared Radio.
Life extends life. The spice. device expand consciousness. The spice is vital to space travel.
Welcome back to X Squared Radio. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. We're coming to you live from Eastern Washington State, where my AccuWindow forecast says it's about 38 degrees outside and drizzling rain. I think it's snowing south of us where our guest James Gilliland is. To people who witnessed the great meteor storms of 1998 and 2002, the word Leonid is synonymous with spectacular. Alas, this year's display of meteors is going to be weak. The Leonid debris system is crisscrossed by rich tendrils of cosmic dust, but Earth will miss the richest tendrils in 2007. Forecasters expect no more than about a dozen ordinary meteors per hour when the shower peaks before dawn on Sunday. That's tonight. So if you want to go outside and bear the boredom of only 12 ordinary meteors, you can do that. You might want to take some time, though, and look to the east. About 9 o'clock tonight, you will see the wonderful red jewel of Mars. Those of you that have been watching Comet Holmes, it is now very close to Merfak, the brightest star of the constellation Perseus, reports Babak Tafreshi of Niasar, Iran. Here, the duo is shown over the 1,600-year-old fire temple of Niasar in Iran, used for centuries by the Zoroastrians. If you want to see that picture, just go to spaceweather.com. You can see that. It's rather spectacular. Also in the news, and this will be very interesting, we're going to try to cover a little bit of this, mysterious plumes of plasma at the edge of the Earth's atmosphere are now threatening airline navigation by throwing off GPS positioning information by up to the length of a football field. Scientists have long understood that outbursts from the sun, called coronal mass ejections, or CMEs, can interfere with communication between Earth-orbiting satellites and the ground. We've experienced that with our old pagers and with cell phones. But there are hints that the ionosphere above the equator could be the source of the plume plasma, feeding it outward to other parts of the ionosphere where the plumes are generated. But it has been difficult to track ionosphere activity at the equator because of the lack of sensors there. Now, that's very interesting. We're going to cover a little bit about that with our guest, James Gilliland, in just one moment. I did want to let you know that Anthony Mannucci of NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, California, says measurements of the ionosphere above the equator could be important in understanding how the plumes are created. He says, if we could go up to space and put an imager looking down, we could see these plumes form and have a much better picture of why they formed in the first place. Now, I find that interesting because one of the peculiar things about UFOs is they're almost always accompanied by a plasma shift, a plasma energy. It seems like the ships use plasma to open a portal or open a pathway or make themselves visible in this dimension. And so my guest is James Gilliland. By the way, his website is eceti.org, eceti.org. If you want to go there, check out his website, check out the films and books that are available. But what you really need to do is get a hold of James Gilliland and see if you can't make your way up to his ranch, rent a room, and just hang out for a couple days and see what you can see. It's a little bit primitive in the sense that, you know, it's not a paved, manicured lawn you're going to be sitting in your lawn chair in, but it is going to be a field of echinacea within almost touching distance of Mount Adams. And you'll see stars like no place on Earth. I can tell you that from personal experience. How are you, James?
Oh, doing great.
All right, let's talk a little bit about these plumes that they seem to be just now, for some strange reason, picking up, and they seem to be interfering with the GPS accuracy, and that could be rather upsetting for airline pilots who are now navigating cross-country and transcontinental and transoceanic flights by GPS, because there are no nav aids over the ocean, so you just kind of have to navigate by GPS. If those locators are a little bit off, by as much as a football field, that's 100 yards for aircraft that are only allowed to stay about 1,000 feet apart. I know I've passed closer than 1,000 feet to other jets passing by as I've flown cross-continent many, many times in the last couple of years, most of which to come out to Washington to go to James's place. What do you think they are, James? Where do you think these plasma plumes are coming from?
You know, my feeling is that it's some kind of an energy, like when we're making contact with the Pleiadians, we'll take a picture and we have these huge plasma fields around us. And it's a very lifting, it's a very high frequency energy, a very lifting energy. And we're totally surrounded by these plasma fields. And so I'm not sure exactly what the origin of these plasma fields, I think it has to do with some kind of a higher frequency energy. I don't know how intelligent it is, but it might even be a technology that goes along with the ships. But my feeling is it's part of the shift that we're going through. It had the energies that are there. It's part of the awakening and healing process that we're going through, as well as the accelerated energies, the field that we're moving into. We're talking about moving into a highly energized place in space right now that our solar system is moving into, and I think that's a byproduct of it. But we also have to realize that light is intelligent, so it probably has some kind of an intelligence or a packet of consciousness and energy attached with it somehow.
Well, that's my feeling too, and that the craft and sometimes they're huge, they don't show up to the naked eye in visible light, but you whip up your digital camera, snap a picture, and then put it on your computer, and bam, here's this ship that was sitting there right in front of your face.
There could be discharges from some of these ships that are coming in because they're, from what I understand, they said that they're, getting close to running out of parking space up there for some of these, really big ships that are coming in. So it's...
And how big can some of these ships get?
Yeah, and they're cloaked, so we're not going to be seeing them unless they decide for us to see them. But I think there's going to come a day real soon through this vibrational lifting and healing process we're in, we're going to be rising in frequencies, just like we're seeing all the orbs now and all the other phenomenon, that's paranormal or spiritual phenomenon that's happening everywhere. Pretty soon these ships are going to become visible to us just because of our own evolutionary process. And,
sort of like the natives who were on the beach with the shaman, and the shaman could see the ships out in the sea, but the people couldn't, and so he actually had to raise their consciousness, I guess with a 2x4 across the back of the head. Then they could see the ship. But, well, maybe these plasma plumes are actually interfaces between dimensions. And
yeah, they could be.
These interfaces are where the ships slip in and out. Now, I remember seeing, I'm trying to remember, 3 or 4 years ago, the NASA channel on satellite TV used to run late at night. They used to run the camera on the bottom of the U.S., of the International Space Station, and it was pointed toward Earth, so you could see Earth passing underneath the space station as it orbited the planet. Now, the peculiar thing was, the minding its own business, going around Earth, camera rolling, people streaming it live off the space station, and it's passing over the Andes Mountains, which are covered with clouds, and all of a sudden, up through the clouds, comes a circular craft. It actually disturbs the cloud layer in a circular manner, comes up through the clouds, and moves out across the clouds. Now, that craft, the International Space Station, is about 245 miles above the planet. And this craft that it saw coming up through the clouds was at least 30 to 40 miles in diameter. This was a very large craft that came up through the clouds. Within, literally, within hours, that feed was stopped, and it has not run since. Fortunately, somebody got that footage on a TiVo, and it went around the world.
Well, it's interesting. I love what some of the work Hoagland is doing, because he's proven that NASA is a military organization. It's funded by the military and governed by the military, and anything having to do with UFOs has the highest clearance whatsoever, even beyond nuclear missiles. And, everything that they film or find out about UFOs is basically has to go through NSA before it can be released, and they say no way, So basically, SETI is the same way. I've never seen just such an open display of, I don't want to say the word ignorance, one of the people in there at SETI, it's unbelievable. They say there's no UFO evidence whatsoever. There's never been any UFOs coming around the planet. And then in his next breath, he says that, it's Seth Shustak, by the way, but he says that our top secret military satellites are monitoring this planet 24/7. He goes, if there was a UFO, I'd know about it. And I'm going, well, wait a second, this is supposed to be a private organization, SETI. How does this guy have access to all of these top secret satellites, and how does he have the clearance to find out something that has the higher clearance than nuclear weapons? How's this guy in the know about all this? How can he make such a statement and just be a private contractor, a private organization? It doesn't make any sense. So there's two rules of thumb here. Either it's part of the disinformation program, or he doesn't have access, one or the other. You can't have both. So, there's a lot of statements going out there, and there's footage in Mexico, and there's crop circles laid out right in front of their facilities. But they have footage in Mexico with UFOs flying back and forth right across their array of antennas there, their dishes. These things are buzzing back and forth in front of them. So when you look at the Mexico footage with, hundreds of ships flying over, the footage coming out of Turkey, the footage coming out of South America, Brazil, with all the governments, the Canadian government, the UK government, France has released all of their files, Brazil is coming out, Mexico. With all of the information that they've released, it's undeniable that UFOs have been coming and going forever. And I don't see how this guy can continue to make a statement that there is no evidence when almost every country has released it except for the U.S. Their files proving that these things exist. So when you really think about it, I think our government is the last government to try to hold back this issue, and it's actually making them look very foolish in doing so.
Well, I wonder about that. I think, do you actually think we have a government that cares enough about civilian involvement with off-worlders to pay people to monitor them? I've noticed a tactic that seems to be working very well. The government leaves people alone to say whatever they want about their meetings and educations from off-worlders. Then they rely on those factions beset with jealousy and selfishness to discredit the experiencer for having interacted with someone from another world. Have you had experiences with others inside the UFO community who have used their influence and energy to stop people from coming to your ranch, for instance?
Oh, definitely. Without a doubt, Peter Davenport with the UFO Reporting Center, he has actually altered files and reports and engineers. And, one, he sent an engineer up to debunk us, and she had a huge ship power up come right off the mountain and just come right towards her. She hit the dirt. And she wrote up the whole report on it. She said, look, I looked at heavens above. I know where the space station was. I know where at the time the mirror was up there, and she goes, I knew where the mirror was. I had all the satellites lined out. And she goes, this thing came out of the mountain, came right at me, got huge, you know, and I had to duck and cover, and then it just backed up and went back the other way. And, you know, this has happened so many times with Boeing engineers. I had almost 30 Boeing engineers say, well, you got to see it firsthand yourself, too. You got the beam treatment. And, you know, this is ongoing here, and we've had NASA investigate this, but they do it undercover. You know, they won't admit it, you know, but they have investigated it. And so, you know, basically the evidence here with this, we have almost 70 hours of footage now, is just overwhelming. I wish we had the technology to really document, you know, this properly. We're looking for some night vision that can attach into a camera. We do have night vision now, but we can't attach it to a camera. But if we could get this one scope that has night vision on it, we could show the most outrageous footage. And, you know, right now we've totally outgunned both NASA and SETI with a, you know, $200 Sony camcorder, which, you know, so if we had a little bigger budget, you know, and a little more equipment, we'd show you the most incredible footage.
We're going to try and see if we can help you with that toward the end of the program. By the way, this is a three-hour program, and James is going to be on with us until 7:15 Pacific time, 10:15 Eastern time, and then we're going to have Bob Hieronymus come on, and we're going to talk with him for about 45 minutes. So toward the end of this hour, we're going to run just a little bit long. We're going to run about 8 or 9 minutes long in this hour, and then we will take a short break and bring Dr. Hieronymus on. We're going to let James, we're going to make sure that you know how that you can help the ranch, and then that way when you make your way up there, you'll have a much more pleasant experience. By the way, this last July, when I was speaking at the UFO conference in San Jose for Victoria Jack, we met George Noory with the Coast to Coast AM, and I had a chance to ask him two interview questions, which was kind of a lifetime highlight for me. And one of the questions that we asked him was, when are you going up to James's Ranch? And he is definitely going to make time in 2008 to get up to James's Ranch. Now, you won't know about it, general public, but we will bring you the report once that happens. We don't want him to be, you know, deluged as a celebrity. We want him to quietly slip in, have his firsthand experience, and then slip out. But we will bring you the post-event documentation and testimony. So it should be rather exciting, which kind of brings me to my next question. Mm-hmm. Almost everyone I meet is of the mind that seeing is believing.
Mm-hmm.
Are we getting close to a grand event like Global First Contact, or are the contacts going to continue forever just outside the believability of the soccer moms of the world? Are we going to have an Independence Day event with a non-aggressive, non-violent, off-world race that's going to finally make themselves present? And part two of that question is this or is this not a threat to American airspace?
Well, the first question is that we are definitely going to have a major event coming where they're just going to power up their ships and just park and just sit there, and we're just going to have to deal with it, that they're here. There's nothing we can do about it. Now,
we're really hoping
that there's another plan coming out. A lot of people, I'm sure your guest knows about the Illuminati, their new next guest, or the New World Order. But they keep a threat going, you know, and the first threat was communism, you know, and then it was going to be, you know, Iraq, and then Iran, and then they're going to take it to the next level. And they always have to keep a threat going for the war industry to keep the funding going to them. So one of the last threats that they want to set up is an invasion, like a mock invasion or a fake invasion. And people need to realize that if this event does happen, it's our own people doing it. you know, our own back engineered stuff and these other groups doing it. But I don't think it's going to happen, mainly because too many people know about it. And, you know, Dr. Greer's work and a lot of other people's work, they've exposed this and made it very clear that this is the program. And so when it does happen, I think that's one of the only reasons we're not in Iran right now, is because too many people got wind of it and were, you know, up on what was going down, that it was already planned, you know, years and years and years ago to go in there. So, you know, too many people got wind of it, and now if they do that whole card, then it's going to, you know, look pretty bad. Everybody's going to know exactly who's behind it and why, and they're not going to buy the spin, you know, or the other nonsense, that the tarot card that they're playing.
So, I hope that's true, but now if for instance, 6 months before 9/11, the news media would come on and say, even if it was a paranormal news media, all right, very soon the government is going to fake an airplane attack on the World Trade Centers. They're going to bomb the World Trade Centers, bring them to the ground, and they're going to bomb the Pentagon, and they're going to claim that a 757 crashed into it. And so when you see this happen, don't believe it, because it's all staged just to get people in the mindset that, okay, let's go to war with Iraq. And then 6 months later, it actually occurs. I still think most of the people would say, let's go get those guys. Let's go to war.
Yeah, I would say so. That is a possibility. The only thing is that there's a whole card called Nature. And with the Earth changes coming up and a lot of the events that are unfolding there, you know, with the global warming crisis and everything else, I don't think they're going to have time to play out there. Their cards, you know, like the way they would like to. So, you know,
so you don't
think
there'll be time for them to turn their guns skyward and say, you know, now we need martial law, now we need a global economy, now we need a global system of taxation, because we really have to raise mega bucks for these mega weapons, and we need to point them towards space.
Well, you know, anybody in their right mind would realize that these beings coming in are millions of years ahead of us, you know, in technology and in the time flow. So some of them billions of years ahead of us, and it's really no contest. If they were to choose to be aggressive, you know, they've been around since biblical times, and they haven't, you know, conquered us and eaten us yet. We are definitely infiltrated, you know, by certain beings, but that's being taken care of. But the major threat isn't coming from, you know, outer space. It's more like inner space, and it's our own ignorance and to keep being herded by sheep, like sheep, you know, and that is the program. I talked a lot about that last night, but the you know, we talked about how gates, you know, there's all these corrals, or there's all these, you know, and they have all these belief systems within these corrals, and governments and religions corral people, and they keep people separate and divided, and that way they can keep the wars going and the fear and the distrust and everything else. And, you know, we have to start, you know, opening up these corrals and you know, stop with the, you know, the divisions that religions and governments are doing, and realize we are one people, we are one planet, and the diversity is okay, but let's just choose to live according to the universal principles, you know, that are necessary for a healthy society and environment.
Well, let me ask you a question along those lines, because there's a think tank called the Brookings Institution.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm going to say 20 years ago, maybe a little longer, they decided, they had a study. What would happen to the social stability of the world if the world had irrefutable proof that we were not alone in the universe, and not only that we were being visited from other worlds? They decided that there would be widespread panic and suicide, and that the social structure of humanity would collapse.
Yeah, I think we have to look at who was on that Brookings Report panel. And when we see who was on that panel, it's pretty obvious the same people that would like to control the destiny of humanity and the Earth were on that panel, and a lot of military people as well. But, you know, you have a Time CNN poll come out that where they say 86% of the people believe UFOs exist, and there is a government cover-up, and, you know, the majority of the people are okay with it. They already know they're here, and that the government's covering it up. And so you really think about, well, who's this 14% that are keeping the truth from the people that aren't transparent, that aren't really serving the people, and who are these guys? And the answer is very clear when you look into it, and it's the same guys that are kind of, you know, the puppet masters behind the strings that are guiding our destiny, and the same guys that are keeping everybody in the corral and keeping everybody divided and separate.
Hmm. Well, do you think there is some solace in discovering once and for all that we are part of a galactic community that comes from the very source we call God?
The only thing I can see, it's going to, there are certain fundamentalist groups that see everything outside their box as evil. And, you know, they just don't have the neural net to comprehend a bigger God, you know, or a bigger galaxy or a bigger universe. And their God is a very small God, and they think it has one group, one chosen people, and that might be their own little church, or it might be a bigger, you know, consortium of churches, you know, or it might be just one people or one race. And it just depends on how big their box is. But, I mean, even the Catholic Church has released information saying that there are other, you know, advanced cultures out there and off-worlders, and they're not to be demonized. And even Billy Graham said they're God's other angels. So a lot of the major, the biggest groups are acknowledging that they do exist. And, you know, we need to wake up and smell the coffee. Now, if you go into the Vedic scriptures, it's all laid out in there. They talk about the different types of ships, you know, who's on them. Some ships are metallic, some ships are pure energy, and some ships are magnetized light ships, and they talk about the gods that fly these ships, and they actually give drawings of these ships and their propulsion systems and how they work and everything in these ancient texts. So they have been around forever, and you know, some of the ancient wars had to do with these ships that we went through that pretty much had to make everybody start over as primitives, you know. So, you know, we've gone through major wars, you know, atomic wars here on the planet. We, you know, we've gone through pole shifts, all kinds of things on this planet, and hopefully we're not going to do it again.
Well, I don't think we're going to walk away from it. Now, you have written two books titled around the base of becoming gods. What is the process of becoming a god?
Yeah, the two books I wrote, one was Reunion with Source, and the other called Becoming Gods. And then I have a third book out, too, called The Ultimate Soul Journey. And the bottom line is no matter how hard you try, you can't separate yourself from omnipresence. You know, you can just live the illusion. And by becoming God, it doesn't mean that you're this supreme lord and ruler over others. It means that you're making contact with the God within you, which is, you know, the teaching of almost every master, saint, or prophet that ever walked this planet. I mean, even Jesus said, you know, ye are gods, children of the Most High. You know, the temple is within, God is within. You know, several times in there he said, ye are gods, you know, in the Bible.
Actually, twice. He said it in John 10:34.
Yes.
And he was quoting Psalms 184.
Mm-hmm. And you know, he also was praying in there. He was praying, he's saying, Beloved Father, let them become one as we are one. So if we have the ability to become one, you know, just like he said, ye will do greater works than I, for I go unto the Father. If we have that potential within us to do the same things that he did, the only thing that's keeping us from that is a lot of fear and a lot of unworthiness and a lot of separation and a lot of the things that many religions teach, unfortunately. And all of those things separate man from making their own personal God connection. And you know, basically that's where we need to go. Once we move into unity consciousness and we see the Creator within all creation, including ourselves and others and nature, then all this separation game, the competition game, the destruction of the environment, the wars, everything stops.
Well, sure. And I mean, Jesus gave us two great commandments, right?
Yes.
He didn't organize a church. He didn't organize a religion. In fact, he was he was rather vocal about the existing church and existing religion, calling them such affectionate names as vipers and scribes and, you know, the blind. And so I think he gave us two commandments. One was love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, might, mind, and strength, and the other like unto it, love thy neighbor as thyself. In other words, love yourself.
Exactly.
That is the greatest commandment of all. If you love yourself, you cannot harm another.
And if you love your neighbor, you can't harm him. You know, the ultimate law is the law of love. It supersedes all other laws and commandments, and that's what
sure.
he said.
Sure.
But, you know, the bottom line is you don't war out of love. You know, you don't compete out of love. You know, you cooperate out of love. You don't.
Well, you might chastise out of love, but you're not going to go to war. I think we have
no.
a caller on the line. Caller, your first name and where you're calling from.
Hi, Brooks. This is Anne from Ontario. How are you?
Hello, Anne. How are you?
Hello,
Great.
Anne.
Great. Hi, James.
Hi. How are you doing?
Oh, pretty good. I just wanted to ask you a couple I guess they're sort of disjointed questions. They're not really related to each other. The first one was more of a something I wanted to add regarding what you were talking about with the government and the UFO cover-up. And there was just something on Reuters I saw on the Internet from last Monday, which kind of sent shivers down my spine. I try and, you know, take it with a grain of salt. It is the government here. But it was actually about this, about Dennis Kucinich, bringing up again, you know, just trying to bring more publicity to UFOs, and this international panel apparently that recently met, calling for the U.S. government to reopen its UFO investigation, and this article doesn't suggest who said this. But what it said is, especially after the 9/11 attack, it is no longer satisfactory to ignore radar returns, which cannot be associated with performances of existing aircraft and helicopters. I don't
really?
Know who the heck said that on the panel. To me, this just sounds like more scary propaganda. Whenever you hear anything associated with 9/11, I just cringe.
Well, see, that is part of the plan that they are doing. I don't know if that was the intention of the person that said that, but
or if they even did say it, because they're not saying who said it.
Yeah, because I know they're going to try to spin this as not a good thing. The thing
right.
about UFOs, if you really think about it, okay, who's running the country right now? You've got the war industry, the oil industry, and the pharmaceutical industry, and these beings have pretty much cured almost every disease known to man. You know, they're extremely advanced, so it would only make common sense that they would have the cure to almost every disease, and probably pretty effortlessly. You know, they also have the fuel-less energy technologies and the anti-gravity and the counter-gravity. And on top of that, you know, they stand for universal peace. So they are a threat to the big three, and so they are going to try to figure out a way to spin all this and turn it
into. Well, it sounds like they're already trying to plant the seed of fear, even though, you know, they're talking out of two sides of their mouth. One side,
yes.
you know, they're saying it doesn't exist, but in case it does, since it is a post-9/11 world, it's just frightening.
Well, it's not that it's really a post-9/11 world. It's a post-Patriot Act world. And so now
exactly.
they have the ability to get into information and block information that they never had before, with or without a search warrant. And they call it the War on Terror, and certainly when I look at the news, there appears to be some terror as a means of warfare. But when I look at the evidence, the real factual evidence of just something like the Pentagon attack, it's clear. It's so clear that it's obvious to the most casual observer. No jet plane hit that building. Period.
Right.
End of sentence.
Exactly.
Done. There's no aircraft debris whatsoever in that accident, in that event. Something else hit that building, and it looks just like the penetration of a heavy missile. That's what it looks like. Now,
so it looks like they're already trying to set up some sort of pseudo false flag, you know, operation in space here with articles like this, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, yes. I think these are the precursor events, and then of course Hollywood's done an excellent job preparing us for alien invasions.
Yeah.
You know, great artists like you know, Spielberg, who did a wonderful job with Close Encounters of the Third Kind, gave us a very warm feeling about the coming introduction of one race to another. In the next half dozen years, completely changed his motion picture tack with Off-Worlders, and used his vast warehouses of UFO information to produce such works as Taken, which struck fear into the hearts of millions of people and has continued to produce movies like that. So we're moving away from the feel-good movies of, you know, gee, we're beginning to communicate with our roots, to, hey, we need to get on a war posture and get a very special Patriot missile, and if we don't have it, we need to get it, and if we don't have the money, we need to get that too.
Yeah, you know, the War of the Worlds was and Signs, both those were just
sure.
abominations, I think. But you know, and it is creating the program, and if you follow the funding, I would imagine you'd probably find out if you know went up to the top of where this funding went to put these movies out. I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't come from some source that was trying to create a program, you know, in the collective consciousness.
And then there was a little cute, there was a very cute independent movie that was put out that did not do well in the theaters. It wasn't well advertised. It didn't come out in a lot of theaters. But July 8th of this year, it became available on DVD, and the sales have been very strong. And that's a movie called The Last Mimsy.
Oh, yeah.
It has people that I've talked to that have seen that movie have been moved to tears because it resonates so powerfully with them. And it's a very positive movie. It's a very intriguing idea of all this Tibetan sacred geometry, how it ties into the possibility that we are being connected with other dimensions and other times via these kinds of energy fields. And these ancient civilizations recorded those interactions in their art, in their buildings, and in their religion.
Yeah, I thought it was an awesome... I loved the movie. The Indian, I thought, was a little weird because they pull these alien gray suits off, and they're just, like, supposed to be biological suits with humans in them. You know, and I think that gave people kind of a misinformation program at the very end. But the rest of the movie, I thought, was awesome.
Yeah, I did, too. I did, too.
Well, that kind of... You know, leads me into the second thing I wanted to tell you both, and
good.
And the world, I guess, here. Next door to me lives this very remarkable little girl. And last year when she was six, and we're pretty close, and we have some very peculiar relationship just because I know that she's a star kid for sure. But she came over disturbed one day to tell me about a dream she had the night before. And this is very typical for her. She said that some extraterrestrials visited her that night. And she said it was a nightmare, but she knew it was real. And
wow.
I said, well, what did they... I said, well, what happened? She said, well, they told me that they used to live here. And that they drove cars, but then they went away, but they wanted to tell me that they're coming back. And I said, well, what did they look like? And she said, well, that's the thing. They look just like the Muppets. And I know it kind of sounds
funny.
Like Zechariah Sitchin meets Sesame Street here, you know?
Yeah.
But
well, I mean, did they look like Big Bird or the Cookie Monster or... how about the professor?
Yeah, they may have just given her a screen memory, too. That happens a lot. It's still appear as something that she may not be frightened by.
For sure. I mean, yeah, that was exactly... I mean, I have to tell you, you could have knocked me over with a feather when she said this to me.
A la Contact by Carl Sagan, that Elle was confronted by her father. And he wasn't really her father. He was an alien, but he appeared in a form that she would accept and listen to.
Well, I know if a ship lands out here in the field and the door opens and an animal comes out, I'm gonna be a little disappointed.
Oh my goodness.
I was just curious what you guys made of that. I mean, it's
it's
so graphic.
These starseed are amazing beings, and what I have found is that we know we have almost 7 billion people on the Earth right now, and apparently it's more people than have ever lived on this planet before, which means they could not possibly be the reincarnation of every being that's lived on this planet, because there just aren't enough souls to make that up. Many of these souls have to come from somewhere else. They're coming from other worlds to here. And they're coming for a specific purpose, for a reason. I don't know exactly what that reason is, but it is apparent that as we near this interface of 2012, a couple years before, a couple years after, we're going to need individuals who have the ability to use that DNA as it's activated. They're going to be very close to the memory of using that DNA. Those of us that have forgotten how to do it, We, for instance, forgot how to fly, or forgot how to walk through walls, or forgot how to see orbs with our naked eye, then we're not going to be too useful. But those that have that memory, really recent memory of how to, for instance, handle that ball, they're going to be able to make that play, which is vital to the survival of the race and maybe even this planet.
Has it really ever been explained? You know, because I've understood that you know the Anunnaki, you know, just, you know, in every, you know, reference text, you know, ever printed about the fact that, you know, once they were here, then they left, now they're allegedly coming back. I mean, why did they leave? And, I mean, I just don't understand.
They had to hop back on their planet again. And,
sure.
They did leave some people behind, you know, to keep an eye on things, and things kind of went retrograde after that. But they definitely, you know, they're the ones that we get the image of the bearded god from. That's where that image comes from, and, you know, the wise old bearded god image. But, you know, to me, they're not going to come back and subdue us or anything else. These are extremely advanced beings, and I think it would behoove us to, you know, drop our fears and our aggression and all this other nonsense and maybe be open to a little help from the galactic community.
Well, and you have to keep in mind, too, that travel between dimensions, between worlds, between galaxies, the scale of time that they're talking about might be hundreds, thousands, maybe even millions of years by our standard, but only a few days by their standard. It's like, well, we turned around and we came back as quick as we could, and we're sorry that 100,000 years expired on this planet, but that's just the nature of physics.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it just seems like that's, you know, among the skeptics, it just seems like that's one of the bigger arguments about the fact that, well, you say that they're, you know, they were here, and I mean, and they're now not here. You know, you can't prove anything to say that, you know, I mean, you know, there's no solid proof to say that, you know,
Temples, you know, all the carvings in the temples and things are pretty clear, you know, that very advanced beings were here.
I'm just playing devil's advocate here, but it just seems like that's, you know, that's a lot of the skepticism, because people try and justify you know, anything, you know, paintings, temples.
Yeah.
Sure.
Let me tell you something interesting about skeptics, and this is really interesting. People say, I'll believe it when I see it.
Right.
But the problem is that you do not see with your eyes. You see with your brain. And we're processing billions of bits of information through our eyes, and our brain chooses which bits that we accept to be our reality. And so it's really a misnomer to say, I'll believe it when I see it, because if you don't have the neural net or the brain capacity, you're not going to be able to experience these other realms and this higher wisdom or this higher knowledge. So what a skeptic is saying is that I'm choosing to remain in my limited awareness and knowledge, and I'm not going to be open to any other new knowledge, is what they're really saying, which is not really, it shouldn't be an embarrassment to you. It's really an embarrassment to them, because it is an open display of ignorance. So, you know, with all the planes and dimensions, we can measure less than 1% of the universe that we live in, and knowing that there are all these other planes and dimensions and life extended throughout the galaxies and dimensions, to me, I can't even wrap my head around us being the only people here. It just makes no sense whatsoever.
Well, it kind of brings me back to the story of the fish who have been told that there's a vast air universe up there where whole civilizations live and fly, and they have houses and electricity and trains and airplanes and all this kind of stuff, and all the other fish say, you know, that's just ridiculous. There is no other universe. This water that we swim in is the only universe there is. However, we do find it really strange that occasionally the surface of our world seems to ripple with energy from the air universe when it rains. So we see the interface between our dimension, our world, our universe, and another universe. As we see dark energy, dark matter, we see electrons blinking in and out, we see the entanglement of energy and matter with one place and another place instantaneously. Do we understand it? No. Is it repeatable? Yes. But we don't know why. So just like James says, we comprehend about 1% of our universe. So how in the world could we be experts on something we can't even see?
Exactly.
And you got to think about the God with the goldfish food too.
Yeah.
Feeding their little universe.
Well, maybe the.
I will let you gentlemen go.
Yeah.
All right, Ann, thanks so much for calling. Please call again.
Nice talking with you all.
Yeah, see the hand of God. They see the hand of God with a little goldfish shaker in it. You know, every once in a while,
yep.
Show up and.
Mana from heaven.
Yeah.
I mean, those same people that would say that UFOs do not exist, there's no such thing as other races, have no problem whatsoever with a light being coming down from heaven and granting their every wish.
Yeah. Well, you know, I you really think about it, any civilization would base their entire reality on being thrown into everlasting hell or whatever and being sinners and damned just because, you know, a woman handed an apple to a guy and he took a bite out of it. I think that doesn't speak very highly of a lot of people in the civilization, that there could be a little more to the story than that, and that, you know, maybe we aren't sinners. You know, maybe we are, you know, came from the Creator, you know, and from, you know, what did God create us out of other than itself? And so maybe we are these divine beings that just forgot, you know, and came down here and hooked up with a physical body and got trapped in all the emotional craziness of that and survival and all the other stuff, and we just forgot who we really are and where we really came from.
Well, that's true, and at some point we've got to learn to lay the battle axe down. At some point,
exactly.
We have to realize some leader has got to step forward with such a voice of common sense as to say, you know, the 2 or 3 or 4 or even 6,000 years that you think your tribe has been here on the earth, and all of the blood that has been spilt, whether it's your cousins or your grandfathers, all that has got to stop. We've got to realize that we are a planet of beings, not a world of nations and religions and races. We are one. And if we can learn to do that, just a mere 7 billion live sentient beings in the universe on this little blue ball, if we can learn to do that, then maybe the galactic community will step out from behind the veil, applauding, clapping, with smiles on their faces and tears running down their face, and they may collectively say, it's about time. We've been waiting for millennia for you human beings to get it.
Yeah, exactly. We all came from the same source, and we're all going to return to the same source. And, you know, and because of that, we're all family. And until we figure that out and get over it and stop with all the competition and greed and the divisions and separations of governments and religions, they're going to stay up there in the ethers and just kind of hang out and wait for us to rise to the occasion.
Well, what is it that we have that's so interesting to them? What is it about us that makes us so valuable in their exploration, in their experience? Why are they even taking the time to bother with us?
I think one of the things is that when you reach a certain level of evolution, you serve creation wherever it is, and they see us as a part of creation that's going through a huge quantum leap in evolution, and they're going to try to help us get through that. And some of them actually lost their worlds and some of their planets and things because they didn't choose peace. Their technology got ahead of them, and you know, just like on the planet before, they went through some very tumultuous times. So I think they're kind of like elder brothers and sisters, and they're coming to assist us to make this shift and hopefully inspire us not to, you know, blow ourselves up and destroy the planet.
Yeah, I think the planet has a vested interest in this, too. I mean, the Earth itself is a multidimensional living being, and there is life living on the surface of it, and there's life living inside of it.
Yeah.
And the lack of harmony of not just the consciousness, but also the physical activities of, i.e. war and hatred and violence and pain, also hurts the Earth. And the Earth has, in my opinion, these allergic reactions, as it were, to that consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have earthquakes and tsunamis and we have volcanoes and we have, you know, plagues of nature that seem to retaliate against this kind of behavior. It vomits it up until we get it.
Oh, definitely. You know, whenever you take a nuclear test and you send those shock waves through the planet, you know, it has to be released. It has to be sent back out again. And so it is coming back out through major earthquakes and things of that nature. So it's everything we do, you know, that we poison this planet, it's a living being, and it has its destiny. It's going to evolve and go to the next level. Whether we're going to be on it when it does is up to some of the decisions that we're going to be making in the future.
I think you're right. I think like Jonah's whale, we are either on the surface of it or in the belly of it. We are involved with this planet, and we might as well. In fact, I think we have a responsibility, a destiny, a calling, if you want to call it that. Many are called and few choose, then let's choose. Let's be one with the planet.
I think at the bottom line is that the original intent for the Earth was to be an Eden, you know, where people live in harmony with each other and nature and evolve to their highest potential. And what I'm seeing and the information I'm getting now is that there are energies and forces that are coming in right now. They're going to reset this destiny. And this process that we're going to see is going to be very intense, and that's where you're going to see all of the darkness and all the negative and all the controllers, and all of them are going to be coming up to the surface, and they're going to be exposed, and a lot of them are just going to drop like flies because they can't go with the new energies that are coming in, and eventually they won't even be allowed to incarnate back on the Earth because the Earth will have moved beyond their frequency, their ability to even, you know, hop back aboard. So.
Well, there you go. You'll have to incarnate on another planet. James, we have about 9 minutes left with you on the program, so I want to ask you what events you have coming up planned for the next year, when are they going to occur, and is there any room for any volunteers to come to the ranch to help you with your projects?
Yeah, we have. Right now, we're really tight on rooms. We have just two rooms available because in winter we kind of close up. But we're under a pretty big snowstorm right now. But around spring, we start opening up again, and we're going to have the big July event. Hopefully, you'll come and be a speaker there July 4th. And there's going to be some great speakers. We'll probably have Michal Ledwith back, and I've got a really good lineup right now. I'm organizing that as we speak. You know, we'll definitely have the big Science, Spirit, and World Transformation Conference here July 4th weekend. And
well,
I'm going to have a lot of mini events. Yeah,
what do you need help with? What do you need help with? Do you need help with air conditioning, with water pumps, with bathrooms, with...
Yeah, well, the bathrooms are in right now. I've got those all in.
Okay.
And definitely need some help with some... we're going to be doing a lot of building projects here and building new rooms and extra rooms and things of that nature. So.
Okay, do you need people to ship you their spare air conditioners or spare heat pumps or spare wire... maybe a gift certificate to Lowe's for a few $100s,
you
know. You know
what I
would
love
ranch?
To get right about now is it's about $6,000, unfortunately, but it is a night vision scope that we found that attaches right to the camera. And that way we could put the footage that we get right on the net and let people see it, you know, firsthand. And that's what we're all about, public acclimation, and we don't hoard anything. I pretty much share all my footage with whoever wants it.
Well, there you go. You Sony execs that are out there, make a phone call to Sony or to JVC or Panasonic and tell them to get some night vision movie-taking ability up to the ranch ASAP. If you feel the need, if that resonates with you, get a hold of us here at X-Squared Radio or even at the network at bbsradio.com. Let us know. And get it up there because this is the hottest UFO spot in the United States, and the world needs to see what's going on there. Let's not let a few dollars keep the truth from getting out to those people. So this is the season of giving.
You know, it's kind of sad when you really think about it. This is one of the most incredible hot spots. We've got thousands of witnesses, people with three different degrees in physics and one guy had triple degrees. He's a physicist three times over. These guys are top Air Force people, pilots, base commanders. We've had all these people out here that have seen these ships on a regular basis. And this is a major event going on, and it's pretty much a one-man show funding the whole thing. And it's kind of sad when you really think about the condition of our planet here when we send billions of dollars or millions of dollars to these other programs, and they're not sharing the information, you know. And if we can do it here and make contact and bring the ships in and film it and everything else, who knows what they've got, you know, what kind of footage do they have, and you know, being out in space and with all the technology that they have. So,
well, here's my plea. Here's my plea here. You're already being taxed for all of those other programs. And I can tell you right now, James is not going to fill out all the grant forms and reveal everything he has up there to the government and open himself up to that kind of scrutiny and qualification. So what we're asking you to do is assign for yourself a new little tax for 2008. Get with at to go to eceti.org, ECETI.org, fill out the donation form. And if we can get a couple of million people to send him $20, we will split open the UFO world like you cannot believe. Just take yourself a little tax, $20 for the year, and send it up there, and let's get some work done. Let's quit playing around with this, guys.
That would be awesome. Yeah, it is interesting how on so little we've done so much. I mean, we've gotten this out internationally now, and this is an internationally known hotspot, and there are millions and millions of people that know about what's going on here. So just with the little funding we've had, we've made just incredible headways, and with some more funding, we'll really blow the lid off this.
Well, that's the idea. We want a grand awakening. We want the world to wake up. We want them to realize who they are, maybe where they came from, and hopefully what they can become if we learn to work together. And all of this is designed to do that. It's not made to divide people. When I go up there to James's Ranch in the summertime and I'm there with 300 or 400 people, they come from everywhere. They're carpenters, they're artists, they're musicians, they're scientists, doctors, they are teachers. And you know what happens in 4 days? These people come together in such unity that you would think that they were all brothers and sisters for 100 years. And they go home with that kind of love in their hearts, and they affect their own communities. So it's not so much that it is a Mecca or it is something special that James does, but it is a special place. And he has been chosen, and he's chosen himself to be the caretaker of this place. He calls it a sanctuary, and for a long time I thought it was a sanctuary where the ETs could come and not be bothered. But then I realized it was a sanctuary for us, where we could go and not be told we were crazy.
Sounds good to me.
All right, my friends. James, it's been an absolute pleasure, as it always is. We have about 6 minutes left. So this film that you put out, which was called Contact Has Begun, how is that film doing? How can people get a hold of this movie?
The best way to go is just go to eSETI.org, and as soon as you pop on the site, it opens up, and it'll have a trailer. You can actually watch part of the movie. And what I love about the movie is it covers everything from ETs, who they are, you know, it covers the benevolent ones that are here to help. And it also covers near-death experiences and the earth changes, and it gives the science behind the changes. So it's a very well-rounded documentary, and everywhere I've played it, we had a standing ovation. So it's been screened several places. Yeah, and this movie really needs to get out right now, especially to places that are going to be undergoing some of these changes, so they can have a little heads up and start preparing for it.
Well, James has been on, I've seen James on the History Channel, so if you've got an old version of the History Channel around, James is recognized around the world. He's well-respected. I have seen the film. And I can tell you that if you like the Discovery Channel or History Channel or Science Channel, this is as well directed, as well edited, and as great music and special effects in it, as good as any of those. So I highly recommend the movie. It's affordable, and the money goes toward a good cause. So if you don't feel like just donating money, go buy the movie. You'll like it. Pass it around to friends. It is designed to open your mind and open your horizons to the idea that that we're not alone in the universe in a very real and broad and multidisciplinary way. So we want you to take advantage of that. All right?
Sounds great.
All right, James.
Go ahead and check out the books, and there's some other videos there. And actually, your talks here at the last two conferences are here as well. So if people want to pick up any of the speakers that came here for the 2006 and 2007, yeah, both of those conferences, top speakers, international speakers from around the world were here. And Brooks, you did two incredible talks here, and they're available as well.
Well, I appreciate that, my friend, and we're just doing the best we can, and I appreciate the compliment, and of course, I'll help any way that I can.
Great. Well, thank you so much for having me on the show and your support, and hopefully we can get some of this technology up here to fully document what's going on a grand scale and get it out.
Well, that would be outstanding to have Reuters stand up and take notice when the footage is sent to them of a high-definition night vision movie of a craft coming into range in focus with witnesses on film. Now, that would be something spectacular.
or three at a time. That would even be better when they power up and make a nice turn, you know.
Exactly.
Let them explain that one.
Yeah, and maybe they'll know, the craft will know, or the occupants of the craft will know what's going on, and they'll come in for that that special
ABC
endorsement.
Was here, and ABC and Fox News both came here and did a very good interview, very positive interview, and they actually got to see the ships. And Jay Leno sent a guy up here, and they filmed two ships coming right at each other and going in opposite directions, and he had the night vision hooked up to the camera. But they've never aired it. They haven't done anything with it.
That's amazing.
I don't know why, but maybe people should contact Jay Leno and say, hey, what's up with the footage, you know?
All right, my friend, have a great rest of the weekend, or have a great week, and winterize that place, and we'll see you later on in the year.
Great. I'll see you then.
All right, my
friend. Have a great evening. Good night.
You too. Well, my friends, we will be back in about... 4 minutes with Bob Hieronymus, and we're going to analyze his book and talk about it, Rosicrucians, Illuminati, Secret Destinies. So don't go away. We'll be back after this. Friends down at NRG Resources have introduced a new engine oil technology. TVT 24/7 is the future of lubrication. This is the industry's first environmentally friendly oil additive that not only increases fuel mileage, it reduces engine, gearbox, and transaxle wear to nothing. The other brands fail anti-friction testing in less than 10 minutes under standard testing conditions. TVT 24/7 went more than 24 hours in the test and still did not fail. Get tomorrow's technology today by visiting the online store at X Squared Radio and pick up TVT 24/7 Engine Oil Energizer. There is some place you should visit before the end of the week. The Horizon Project is probably the most important examination of future events in the world today. But there is a reason you should visit their website soon. I can't give you all the details here, but I can tell you that the first DVD in the six-part series is now available for pre-purchase at $5 off. This series will no doubt be airing on the History Channel or Discovery Channel, but you need the uncut version with all of the bonus material. Trust me, it may be one of the most important video productions you will ever see. Click on the Horizon Project banner at X Squared Radio today. If you have survived the disaster without food and clean water, then you need to visit NitroPack. They have been providing emergency preparedness supplies for more than 19 years. They have everything from 72-hour kits to a full year's supply for an entire family. We wanted you to have access to the best. That is why we searched for many months to find NitroPack. Click the NitroPack banner at X Squared Radio and get prepared. The foundations of religion and science were utilized to write our first two volumes of The Ark of Millions of Years. The third volume, called Unlocking the Secret, is about to hit the presses. We want you to be aware of what is coming. You and I know that your potential is absolutely unlimited. We have crafted the final work of the trilogy, so you have the tools necessary to work the law of attraction. Find out what the ancient masters knew. Learn the methods necessary to affect the universe on purpose for the good of your life. Go to the online store at X Squared Radio and get your copy on order today. Agnew with X-Squared Radio with a message for our friends in the radio broadcast world. If you have noticed that your listeners aren't around anymore, it's because they are right here with us. If you would like them back in your radio fold, then all you have to do is add X-Squared Radio to your program content. The statistics don't lie. We are now the fastest-growing talk radio program in North America. Don't be late, because we are about to launch another hour of X-Squared Radio. Welcome back, Earth Explorers, to X-Squared Radio. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew, coming to you live from eastern Washington State, where it's a frosty, starry night. We're glad you're here. A rocket thruster based on an engine designed to power a lunar lander on an expedition to the moon has been successfully tested by Northrop Grumman Aerospace Company in the U.S. The thruster runs on a mix of liquid methane and liquid oxygen, which has the potential to be even more efficient than other engines, but has never before been used to power or steer a spacecraft. The Apollo lunar landers used exotic mixtures called hypergolic fuels, which ignite when they come in contact with a matched oxidizer. Because they are liquids or at or near room temperature, hypergolic fuels don't require heavy cryogenics or pressurized tanks and can be stored longer than liquid hydrogen and liquid oxygen without boiling away. Hypergolic engines require the use of compounds such as nitrogen tetroxide and hydrazine, which are extremely toxic for astronauts and ground crews. Meanwhile, other teams are also working on more powerful methane liquid oxygen engines suitable for lunar liftoff. Last year, NASA engineers fired a methane liquid oxygen engine for 103 seconds, and X-Core Aerospace test-fired a methane liquid oxygen engine that generated 33,400 newtons, that's about 7,500 pounds, of thrust in shorter bursts, lasting about 1 second. You have heard us tell you about the X Games, the Lunar Lander Competition. A mock lunar lander built by Armadillo Aerospace stands to win the $1.35 million at the X Prize Cup this weekend, where it will be the sole entrant in a NASA-sponsored rocketry contest for the second year running. Armadillo Aerospace, a company based in Mesquite, Texas, and also led by Doom video game creator John Carmack, fielded the only vehicle to fly in the 2006 contest, but did not win because it crash-landed. Armadillo is the only entrant again this year, although 9 teams had originally signed up for the contest. The competition is divided into 2 levels. In order to be eligible for the lesser $350,000 first prize, a rocket must rise 50 meters from its launch pad, move 100 meters horizontally, and then land back on a concrete pad, staying in the air for a total of at least 90 seconds. It must then repeat that feat and return to its starting point. Kind of a complicated contest. To qualify for the $1 million prize, a rocket must make a similar flight, but this time it must stay aloft for 180 seconds and land on a bumpy surface that simulates that of the moon. The idea is to have the future lunar lander automatically avoid obstacles like craters and boulders during landing using sensors that can scan the ground and software that can recognize and avoid these threats. It takes a little bit of the skill out of landing the craft away from the astronauts and puts it in the hands of computers, a lot like flying a stealth fighter. A regular pilot could not possibly fly that airplane. It takes five computers working in concert with each other to actually keep that plane in the air. It's so aerodynamically unsuited for flight. Also, the last thing we have is prosthetic limbs controlled by thought alone could soon be capable of vastly more complex movements, including a choice of different hand grasps and shoulder and elbow rotations. It's kind of interesting. Our third hour is about to begin a little bit late because our guest has his own radio program, 21st Century Radio. All children growing up in America learn who the founding fathers were. Most, however, never learn of the founders' connections to the Freemasons, the Rosicrucians, and other esoteric orders. In Founding Fathers' Secret Societies, Robert Hieronymus investigates these important connections, as well as the founders' connections to the League of the Iroquois, and how the influence of these groups can be traced throughout our most significant national documents and symbols, especially the Great Seal. He reveals in detail how the reverse of the Great Seal, which appears on the back of the $1 bill, is a blueprint that conveys the secret destiny of America. In decoding the symbolic meaning of the Great Seal's reverse, we discover the unique opportunities our current era presents for achieving our founding fathers' spiritual vision. Robert Hieronymus, Ph.D., is a historian, visual artist, and radio host. His weekly program, 21st Century Radio, broadcasts new paradigm topics across the United States. His book is Founding Fathers' Secret Societies, and it's subtitled Freemasons, Illuminati, Rosicrucians, and the Decoding of the Great Seal. His website is secretdestiny.org. Welcome to the program, Robert.
Well, Brooks, thank you very much for that introduction. I really appreciated that, especially touching on the League of the Iroquois Indians, who actually were far more important than most people even suspect. As a matter of fact, as you probably are aware of, the Native Americans' involvement in their own forms of republic in this continent, the Cherokee and, of course, the Iroquois, goes back at least maybe about the 12th century. That's
really?
About four, that's 12th century, but that means it's at least 300 years before Christopher Columbus got here. So these were our mentors to Jefferson, Franklin, Washington, Paine, the Adams, John Adams, et cetera, et cetera. This, unfortunately, has been forgotten. And it wasn't until about 1990, and this is what's kind of shocking to me, it wasn't until about 1990 that our president at that time, George Bush, the dad of our president this time, had written into law, et cetera, that up in New York State, that it was the founding fathers were influenced by not just the Native Americans, but because they were influenced by, they influenced our Constitution. Now, if you listen to other far rightists like Rush Limbaugh and others, they absolutely deplore this idea. They think it's impossible.
Really?
Native Americans were savages, and they couldn't possibly have influenced our founders. But they're dead wrong. The documentation is overwhelming, and I was kind of hoping when my book first came out in 1989, America's Secret Destiny, that some of the other folks who have been studying this or working on this would discuss the League of the Iroquois, because their republic that they had between five and later six nations, Indian nations, was extremely knowledgeable concerning the importance of women. Women were considered the equal of men. It was the women that selected the chiefs, and actually the women could vote them out for breaking rules and regulations and that type of thing. Men basically, there's very little that they owned. Women basically owned. It was a matriarchal society, and its emphasis was upon peace. And I'm sure you're aware of matrilineal societies throughout centuries are kind of regimented toward that kind of concept.
Sure they are. I mean, we look at our own pre-Christian lineage, and we see that the crown actually came through the lineage of Mary.
Yeah.
So they too, you know, paid very close attention to this matriarchal descendancy. Why do you think the founding fathers thought that the Indians had outdone the Romans?
Because it was the way they conducted their government, in which it was considerably different than the way we had do it today, in which the women would be described. They didn't write. They had prodigious memories, and what was ever discussed during any of their meetings amongst the tribe was memorized by the women, who would document this. And again, they had prodigious memories, as many of the Celtic. You know, I'm sure you're familiar with the Celtic tradition, which memory
sure.
is key to their understanding of consciousness and government. So they basically, of course, were a hell of a lot more humane than any other republic that's ever existed on this continent. And we owe a great deal to them, and that's why I'm kind of hoping that there will be more of the feminine consciousness in our next election. I'm not saying that I would vote for Hillary Clinton, but the more women we have in government, I think there will be an extension of that kind of taking care of, nurturing our planet back to health, because from listening to what I've heard already and on your program, Brooks, you are well aware of the earth changes that are possible, the problems with our climate and global warming, which, of course, the CIA knew about back in the 70s. I was with my dear friend at that time. Do you remember a guy named Christopher Byrd and Peter Tompkins? They wrote The Secrets The Secrets of the Soil and Secrets Life of Plants.
Oh, I do remember The Secret Life of Plants, yes.
Secret Life of Plants, etc.
That's where I remember Richard Byrd, yes.
And so Mr. Byrd was OSS, and so was Mr. Tompkins. In other words, they were CIA. And they gave me information from their records back in the 70s that indicated that it was well known that we were moving into some very serious difficulties in the decades to come, but our government wasn't going to act on that information because their concerns were this would vastly affect our economy. In other words, people would not be thinking about trying to put their money into storing food or creating a shelter, but they would much rather have them buy cars and homes and change their clothes 5 times a day, you know, that kind of thing.
Sure, sure.
So
it's more important to keep General Motors in business than it is the food storage companies. Let's go back to the founding of the nation, though, because I find this completely fascinating that, you know, our founding fathers came here, and they were a colonial nation. That is to say, they were seeded, they were financed, they were their technology, their leadership, their training, their education, everything came from England, from Europe. And then they found themselves here with a wealth of natural resources, and they were being taxed into oblivion, literally taxed into poverty. And so the colonial mindset that more than just, you know, breaking away from England and becoming independent, no, it went much further than that. It was sort of like this nation had a destiny, that there was an ancient prophecy that a nation would arise, not only with the rights of free religion and private ownership of land and the ability to become the greatest that you can become, but there was this legend of a nation called the New Jerusalem, and it was so deeply seated into the rites of Freemasonry. It went way back into the 12th century. but they didn't have the money to fight England. There was no possible way they could win. So it was actually a couple of Jewish brothers, the Solomon brothers, who financed most of the revolution. Of course, they died penniless. And this link between these secret societies went so deep into European culture that the British officers found themselves unable to fight against it. And so the internal workings of the British army broke down because they were actually fighting against something more ancient and more meaningful to them than their enlistment in the British army.
I'm so glad you mentioned the Solomons, because it was one of them, C-H-A-I-M, I believe his first name was, that was very close to George Washington, and that's how the six-pointed star was one of the flags. As you know, our American flag had six-pointed stars, seven-pointed stars, eight-pointed stars, and of course, much later, five-pointed stars, But Washington wanted to accede to Solomon's request that the six-pointed star be used on the American flag. And Washington, mm-hmm. of course, had flags that had the six-pointed star on it. But unfortunately, later on, the Congress and the Christian movement at that time was very much opposed to it. So we ended up with a five-pointed star rather than a six-pointed star on our flag because of that. But you're right, these two Solomon brothers played a very important role in allowing our nation to continue. This is
Washington kind of snuck it in there anyway, because on the $1 bill, the stars arranged on the seal of the $1 bill are arranged in a pattern of a Star of David.
That's correct. And our very first seal of 1782... had 13 six-pointed stars in that 13-star pattern.
And it wasn't an eagle, it was a phoenix.
Well, there's a lot of question about that. But there was a phoenix that was suggested by one of the committees. I think it was one of the very first committees, the phoenix. The third committee had a phoenix on top of a Doric column at that time, because it was, I believe it was William Barton thought that the phoenix symbolized to them the dying of the British form of government and the rebirth of the republic in the American form of government. And
rising out of the ashes.
Rising out of the ashes of King George. And, you know, there are a lot of parallels between what was going on in the founding of our country 200 years ago and what's going on in our country today.
Sure,
Especially in regards to the importance of Thomas Jefferson and the struggle that he had. You know, as you probably are well aware, but I don't know if your listeners are, our country almost became... there was a great movement between 1790 and 1800 to return to a monarchy. At that time, there were a party at that particular time called the Federalists were very deep into moving in that direction. As a matter of fact, they were the ones that claimed that Thomas Jefferson was an Illuminati and spread rumors about him. Basically, their movement was, let's go back to a form of government that we know we can depend on, because in democracy, you can't control the people.
Yeah, that's right, Bill. They're not controllable.
Yes, they're an unformed. Well, they can now, Brooks. They can now through the media. Let's face it, and they do. To a great extent, and if it weren't for programs like yours, it would get much worse.
Sure. Wasn't it Herodotus that said that any government is doomed to failure when the people can vote for themselves a portion of the public treasury?
Well, they certainly would vote as much of that treasury to themselves as possible, as we're seen under this particular administration, but there are a lot of things that are going on during the last 6 years that are very similar to what was going on back there in the around 1800.
Most curious. You mentioned a name, the Illuminati, and I'm really ignorant when it comes to the Illuminati. I don't read much about it. I hear all kinds of scattered rumors about it. Educate me and the listeners of the program about the Illuminati. Who are they? What are they doing?
Well, Brooks, this is a really important question because when you look at the Illuminati, what does Illuminati mean? It is really about enlightenment, and the enlightenment that we're talking about here deals with the enlightenment that existed during that age of enlightenment, which all of the founding fathers were very much involved in. Their belief was that through reason you could basically form a government that would last, that'd be representative of the people. But this a fellow by the name of Adam Weishaupt in about 1776, who lived in Bavaria, and you're pretty much familiar, I'm sure, with the way things were in governments during that time period, and the most important aspect to emphasize was when you mix the church with the state, with a state-supported religion, you got into big trouble.
Sure.
As a matter of fact, you lost your freedom to speak of anything that was critical of those in power. In the church basically controlled your so-called mind or spirit, and the state controlled what you could do with your physical body. So those two coming together really put a hammerlock on science, because if you couldn't look through a telescope and see that there were pockmarks on the moon or wherever, and be burned to the stake for that kind of assault, that's just, of course, I'm not exaggerating. I'm sure you know that that's true.
Oh, yeah, Galileo had a heck of a time getting him to look through his telescope.
And the science was always controlled by the state. And in Bavaria, it was about as bad as it could get. And that's one of the reasons why Adam Weishaupt said, look, unless we can separate church and state, unless we can eliminate the power of the church and the power of the monarchy, we are going to forever be under the thumb of a controlling force. So, at that time, he formed what was called a secret society called the Illuminati. The Illuminati only existed for about 12 years. It basically tried to influence certain elements within Freemasonry. Most people think that Weishaupt was a Freemason when he created this society. That's not true. He first created this society and then got involved in Freemasonry. And the thought was that Freemasonry would be infiltrated by the Illuminati, and the Illuminati were to remove all heads of church and state. Now, if you're going to remove the heads of church and state, you've got some enemies there, Brooks.
Yeah, I guess you do, especially if you don't want to be removed.
You're going to be hammered.
But I've kind of seen, at least from the people that I know, that the Illuminati are not a good thing. They're not doing the will of the people or the will of freedom. They're actually doing, acts of assassination and pitting one nation against another.
This becomes very complicated because it depends upon the quality of the source and research materials. And a lot of this material that I think is questionable comes especially from what I call the fundamentalist conspiratorialists. In my new book, which is coming out in April, it deals with a concept that is based upon the it's anti anything dealing with masonry is anti masonry. It's the sources that they use that are extremely questionable. Well, let me give you an example. A fellow by the name of name in history is Leo Taxil, and T-A-X-I-L. And this individual became a Freemason was thrown out of Freemasonry after the first degree because he was involved with pornography. He was involved.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes, he was. And he was involved with some various... He loved to create hoaxes. So he created a hoax about Freemasonry. And it basically went kind of like this, that the Illuminati had moved into Freemasonry and taken it over, and therefore their goal was to control the world. Now, he got away with this for a number of years until finally some people started to check into his credentials, and then they found out that Leo only had, he never really was a Freemason the way he said, and his exposés of Freemasonry were exaggerated to say the least, and very incomplete because he only had 1 year in Freemasonry, and he got to the point when he was being questioned that he finally, in Paris, he confessed that he made all of this up. Now, this has been documented in about 100 years ago when he made his confession. Now, unfortunately, the fundamentalist conspiratorialists accept what Leo Taxil says verbatim. They didn't check their sources. That was really a key problem of myths and disinformation. And that's what you find a great many people today really confused about the Illuminati, because they died off after about 12 years later. As a matter of fact, Jefferson was supposedly an Illuminati, and he wasn't, of course. He proved that. Then they tried to say Washington was one, and he, of course, was not. It was not as strong a movement as most people would like to think. And unfortunately, there were other sources of and disinformation concerning the Illuminati that grew out of that. Even if you check, I think the most important thing about any type of historical research is trying to go to primary sources. And there's a serious problem with that, especially when they're written in 4 and 5 different languages. So unfortunately, to some, they have accepted Leo Taxil. Some have basically said, okay, that's not true, it was all made up. But there are others, like Tex Mars, Richard Ickes?
Ike,
yeah, I call him Ickes.
Do the Illuminati exist today?
Not along the lines of the Illuminati of Adam Weishaupt, but they do exist in the form of what is called skull and bones.
Ah, I see.
When you get into the skull and bones, that's when you really get to what they could have referred to as Illuminati. As a matter of fact, they used the skull and bones up at Yale University, which was founded in 1832, took the rituals from Germany of a particular secret society, and became a secret society in Yale. And, of course, our present president, George W. Bush, and his father, and his father's father, in other words, his grandfather, all were members of the Skull and Bones. And this is a particularly difficult organization to get accurate information on, but they basically exist to get other members of their society in and throughout our government. Like, say, for instance, if you take a look at the media, Time magazine and I believe it's Newsweek magazine were both founded by Skull and Bones. So if you expect to get the inside story on anything dealing with the Illuminati, you're not going to get it from those organizations.
Right, right, yeah. That's
correct. And as soon as you, I know that you're quite aware that Ronald Reagan, and I think it was 1986 when he allowed General Electric to purchase NBC, down went another network who couldn't possibly analyze any of the problems with our environment because General Electric is one of the greater polluters of the world.
Sure.
Not just the United States, but especially in India. And understanding who the Illuminati are, it's not Freemasonry of today. It is an organization that would represent their thinking, and what they do would be the Skull and Bones. And most unfortunately, those who talk about Freemasonry being or are anti-Masonic
really need to focus on a secret society that is far more powerful than any Freemasonic group in the world today. And yet,
I'm trying to think of the origin of the Skull and Bones. It certainly weren't pirates. There was, I believe, a man who was in love with a woman. The woman had died in her youth suddenly. They buried her, and then some months later he had a vision that he was supposed to marry this woman. So they dug her up, he married her, and then they buried her again. And then about a year later he had another vision where he was told that if you dig her up and keep her thigh bones, her femurs, and her skull with him, that he would be blessed with great power and great wealth, which he was. And when he died, the skull and the two bones were passed on to his successor, who also had great wealth and great power. Now, this was in the early 18th century, so that tradition carried forward, and it may have come to this nation and helped found the University of Yale.
Well, that certainly would be one of the methods by which Yale had accepted these. Remember, you said early 18th century, so that would make it 1730s.
Yeah, 1740.
Yeah, but the documentation on that I've seen and studied and others have, it makes it about 1832, because when this the founding of it came about, when an individual who had left the United States and went over to Germany at that time, when he came back, Phi Beta Kappa, which was a secret society in a certain sense at Yale, had just been eliminated. And what he had attempted to do, and what he did, was he set up the Skull and Bones to counter that. But the philosophy within Skull and Bones is a Hegelian doctrine of basically you have thesis, antithesis, and synthesis. And that's a philosophy of, if you have a statement, then in order to promote that statement, the philosophy is that you emphasize its opposite to bring in some kind of a conflict and discussion over it, and then you settle for a synthesis, a combination of the thesis and antithesis, in order to move ahead in that type of philosophy. I'm really glad you brought up the skull and the two crossbones being key, because it was believed that in order by this group, in order for the soul to go to where it's supposed to go and to return, you needed the thigh and cross the thigh bones, and the cranium or the skull, and that was the origin in part of the importance of the pirate flag. And there's really interesting theories and concerning who the pirates really were, at least segments. Some, of course, being Knights Templar. But as most people, you know, Stephen Sawyer wrote a very good book on the secret societies and the power elite. And in it, we find out that many of those who are big time in the sense of economically wealthy individuals were involved in the slave trade, drug trade, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Wow.
And they were in part also pirates at that particular time.
Wow.
So they used their
skill to plunder and rob the wealth of the world, and through no production of their own. Oh, gee, kind of like the IRS.
Yes, and also, of course, they were just doing what they learned from England. Because everything about the Boston Tea Party and its importance was the fact that there was a huge monopoly around the world, and that particular company that was concerned with tea at that time wasn't just importing tea. they were doing one hell of a business in heroin and other aspects of it. So, and by the way, and there are theories and some researchers and some books dealing with that fact that may be still going on today.
Wow.
One of the reasons why, allegedly, now this is a theory, allegedly the reason why drugs such as heroin or marijuana or cocaine are never going to be so-called legalized in the United States is because That is how some of our alleged black budget is funded.
I wouldn't be the least bit surprised. Dr. Hieronymus, I wish we had a lot more time. We've got about 3 minutes left. I wanted to ask you, because we brushed on these ancient civilizations that left us symbols and directions for the New Age. Do you think that the Freemasons or the Illuminati left for us a symbol in our government cadre, in our libraries, in our architecture, a symbol for the New Age, this Age of Enlightenment?
Well, they did, but it wasn't just the Freemasons and Rosicrucians. It was the Enlightenment. And the Enlightenment basically told us this, that human beings are more than just a physical body. They have an immortal component. When you take a look at the pyramid and the eye in a triangle, what you have here is an ancient story. That story deals with the coming together of the spiritual world and the physical world, the spiritual world being the eye in the triangle and the pyramid being matter or mother. It's the unification of the spirit coming down into the physical body that is our element of, well, let's put it this way, it is who we really are on this planet. We're not machines. We are not machines. This immortal component allows us to elevate our awareness into much higher dimensions than the physical. And it's my opinion that I don't believe those within that are in control of our government and above that are too interested in our using that power. Because once you get involved on that level of consciousness, you can't lie to a person with
right.
that awareness. They
exactly
see it
right.
in your energy field. They know that you're lying, and there's no way that you can confuse them on that.
So what
that's
is
very
the secret? What is the secret destiny of America in a couple minutes?
America's secret destiny basically was to establish a pattern, an archetype of a representative form of government that all humans would be basically allowed to participate in, that we were the seed of it, and that it would spread throughout the planet. So that as above, so below, we are one people on one planet. And that kind of consciousness is not necessarily too favored by this particular administration or others, but that's where the world is headed. And I think that it's not going to be an easy road. It's going to be pretty tough because, as you probably are well aware, between now and 2012 and above, we're going to be tested severely by the environment.
I couldn't agree with you more on all those fronts, not just the government, but also the planet testing us. My guest has been Dr. Robert Hieronymus, Ph.D. He's a historian, visual artist, and a radio host of 21st Century Radio, and his website is secretdestiny.org. And his book, I read it, I liked it, it taught me a lot about these secret societies. It's called Founding Fathers Secret Societies, and it's subtitled Freemasons, Illuminati, Rosicrucians, and the Decoding of the Great Seal. I can't thank you enough for coming on the program. We have to do this again when we have a full 3 hours, because you've got a lot more information.
I hope you can join us on 21st Century Radio. And thank you for rendering such an important service to our planet.
Oh, I appreciate it. And I definitely accept your invitation for 21st Century Radio. You've done a fine job over there, too.
Well, have a good evening.
All right. Thank you very
evening,
much.
It's night. Oh, wow.
Well, it's still evening over here on the West Coast, so we'll try to make the most of it.
Oh, right. Yes. Oh, wow.
Good night, my friend.
Good night.
Good night. All right, Earth Explorers, we'll play our exit, and we'll be with you next week, same time. Don't go away, and just tune in next Sunday here at bbsradio.com. It has been a great pleasure to have you here with us this evening. Tell a friend about us, because every Sunday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, we bring you the best 3 hours of exploration into the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. If you're not getting all 3 hours, send us the call letters of your local station, and we'll do the rest. Remember, Earth explorers, that you are Source. Everything we do will eventually affect the universe, so try to do it on purpose. Reach out for the good in people and help it to grow a little every day. And before long, you will have saved the planet. This is X Squared Radio saying, peace, Earth explorers.